shall be free. When the last thing we notice is the color of skin, and the first thing we look for is the beauty within. When the skies and the oceans are clean again, then we shall be free. We shall be free. We shall.
News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. The chairman and vice chairman of the independent commission investigating the September 11th attack said Monday that they would ask Condoleezza Rice to testify under oath in any future questioning because of discrepancies between her statements and those made in sworn testimony by President Bush's former counterterrorism chief. I would like to have her testimony under penalty of perjury, said the commission's chairman, Thomas Kane, the former Republican governor of New Jersey, in comments that reflected the panel's exasperation with the White House and Ms. Rice, the president's national security advisor. A voter survey tied to Republican effort to raise money for House candidates mislabels Thailand and the Philippines as countries that harbor and aid terrorists, say officials from both governments. A question on the National Republican Congressional Committee's Ask America 2004 Nationwide Policy Survey asks, should America broaden the war on terrorism into other countries that harbor and aid terrorists, such as Thailand, Syria, Somalia, the Philippines, etc.? Officials from both nations say the question came as a surprise since the Bush administration has praised their countries for their roles in the anti-terror war. With U.S. retail gasoline prices at a record high, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry on Tuesday will propose a new policy to reduce fuel costs, igniting a political fight over how much Americans pay at the pump. Blaming the spike on the failed policies of Republican President Bush, a former Texas oil man, Kerry would pressure oil-producing nations to increase production and temporarily suspend filling the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve, campaign aides said. Kerry chose San Diego, which has the highest gas prices in the country, $2.12 for a gallon of regular unleaded, to lay out his proposals. Alistair Cook, the broadcaster who epitomized highbrow television as host of Masterpiece Theater and whose Letter from America was a radio fixture in Britain for 58 years, has died, the British Broadcasting Corporation said Tuesday. He was 95. Cook died at his home in New York at midnight, a spokesman for the BBC's press office said. No cause of death was given, but Cook had retired earlier this month because of heart disease. More news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A Texas woman heating fish sticks was shot in the leg by a .357 caliber handgun that had been stashed in her oven by a friend, police said. Roxanne Perez was taken to a local hospital where she was in good condition, police said on Friday. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Sometimes when I see those in power pull some political action that's stupid, I say to myself, what were they thinking? But a recent action by the Bushites is so obtuse, so blindingly stupid, that you can only conclude that no thought at all was involved, that no one with the brain power of a single-cell amoeba could have been consulted on such a perverse decision. The Bush incident revolved around a bit of political fluff that the White House tried to foist on us last Labor Day. With his jobs record rivaling Herbert Hoover's, and with every industry from manufacturing to high-tech sending hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs offshore, Bush's political handlers decided that he needed to do something. Not really do something in the sense of stopping our country's middle-class bleeding, but appear to do something. So, George announced that he was creating, ta-da, a new Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing. Big whoopee. A new bureaucrat to do what? To be a cheerleader and provide political cover, of course. That was stupid. But then came stupid on steroids. 6 months after announcing this position, Bush finally got around to appointing his new manufacturing czar. It was Anthony Raimondo, a Bush campaign contributor and the CEO of a manufacturing outfit in Nebraska. Fine. Since he's from the biz, he might have an actual idea about how to stop offshoring. But no. Guess who had recently fired 75 of his own corporation's U.S. workers and built a new factory in China to employ 180 workers? Yes, Anthony, our new czar. This is Jim Hightower saying, this was too embarrassing, even for Bush's White House of big blunders, so Anthony's name was withdrawn. But it shows how clueless the Bushites are. As Senator Charles Schumer put it, this White House is so bad at jobs, it can't even fill the one it created.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
He's the man who uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
Happy Tuesday, friends. Tom Hartman here. Your light at the end of the tunnel of talk radio. Why, it is the story behind the story here is the story that I wonder if the news media is going to pick up. The Associated Press just reported, about an hour ago, actually. It's interesting. Several people sent me this in email. Just, hey, look at this. It's like, yeah, it just reported, but the story behind it, just reported, in a reversal, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice will testify in public, under oath, before the 9/11 Commission. However, there is a condition. I have been wondering, I haven't gotten into it on the air here, and I probably should have, but rolling around inside the back of my brain here for the last few days, I've been wondering when people are going to start saying, well, when is George Bush going to testify under oath about 9/11? Or when is, perhaps even more important, when is Dick Cheney going to testify under oath about 9/11, since he was the head of the commission, or the committee, on terrorism that never met? Well, it turns out that the deal is that if Condi Rice testifies under oath, Cheney and Bush don't have to. Nice deal. Nice deal. You know, as the old saying goes, you know, nice work if you can get it. Now, the commission had unanimously agreed to the administration's conditions for the testimony. The decision was conditioned on the Bush administration receiving assurances in writing from the commission that such a step does not set a precedent and that the commission does not request, quote, additional public testimony from any White House official, end of quote. So it's remarkable. Which brings me to the topic of this first hour in our program today. And that is, and this is a tough one. On this program, I mean, I certainly the callers to this program have no reluctance about calling George Bush a liar. And I have pointed out misstatements of his and have identified them in the past as lies. But I'm right up front. I have an agenda here. This is not mainstream news radio. You know, this is talk radio. This is a different thing. But the mainstream press, at what point? And think of this in terms of how the impact on the institution of the presidency as much as anything else. At what point is it appropriate for the mainstream press to call the president a liar? To use that particular word as opposed to misstatements and, you know, errors and things like that. Or to simply call him on statements that he's made. But, you know, really the liar thing. Before I get into that in detail, I just wanted to share with you a story. This is a news story from July of 2001. Now, you know, in your little internal time machine, go back to, let's see, July, August, September, 3 months before 9/11. 9/11 hasn't happened yet. And this story appeared on CBS News, July 28th, 2001. The headline was, this is from the CBS News website, headline, Ashcroft Flying High. And here's a bit of the story. Fishing rod in hand, Attorney General John Ashcroft left on a weekend trip to Missouri Thursday afternoon aboard a chartered government jet, reports CBS News correspondent Jim Stewart. In response to inquiries from CBS News over why Ashcroft was traveling exclusively by leased jet aircraft instead of commercial airlines, the Justice Department cited what it called a threat assessment by the FBI and said Ashcroft has been advised to travel only by private jet. Interesting. Asked if he knew about the threat or who might have made it, the Attorney General replied, quote, frankly, I don't. That's the answer, end quote. Earlier this week, again, you know, I'm reading here from CBS News, July 26, 2001. Earlier this week, the Justice Department leased a NASA-owned G3 Gulfstream for a six-day trip to western states. Such aircraft cost the government more than $1,800 an hour to fly. When asked whether Ashcroft was paying for any portion of the trips devoted to personal business, like his fishing trip, a Justice Department spokeswoman declined to respond. And then they note, Janet Reno, Ashcroft's predecessor as Attorney General, routinely flew commercial airplanes. And that the secretaries of state and defense traditionally fly on military aircraft. Mr. Ashcroft, why on July 26th, a week before the notorious August 6th briefing that George Bush got in Crawford, Texas, which I'm going to get to in just a second, why did you stop flying on commercial airlines? And why didn't you advise us to do the same? Well, he's not going to be testifying before the 9/11 Commission. They cut a nice deal here. Now, but back to back to the explicit and specific statements that George Bush has made. Here's one. This is first of all, this is Mitch Daniels. Mitch Daniels was the budget secretary under Bush until he had a falling out, as it were. And he's asked, you know, hey, the administration is submitting a budget that is showing a deficit. And we thought that, you know, you guys, you know, Clinton showed a surplus. We thought you guys at least were trying to break even here. And Mitch Daniels replies.
Have not set a target figure. The president had said throughout his campaign and long before these events were visible to us.
Now note that, Bill. Throughout his campaign, the president had said
that he hoped to always operate in the black and, in fact, at levels beyond the Social Security surplus, but that there were three conditions under which a deficit would be acceptable, those being war, recession, or emergency. And as he said to me shortly after the 11th, lucky me, I hit the trifecta.
Well, lucky me, I hit the trifecta. Now, here's the interesting thing. Journalists went back and they said, George Bush said this during the campaign? I don't recall that. Could the White House please provide us with a transcript of any speech, or for that matter, any written policy matters, that Bush or the Bush administration or the administration in the Bush campaign put forward before 9/11, in which he made that statement? And the White House has now said there is no such thing. The statement was never made. However, and this is particularly interesting, if you go to the whitehouse.gov site, you will discover 14 different speeches on that site in which George Bush says variations on this one particular speech.
You know, I was campaigning in Chicago, and somebody asked me, is there ever any time where the budget might have to go into deficit? I said, only.
Now, it turns out it's just simply not true. He never said that in Chicago, and the White House has said that.
If we were at war or had a national emergency or were in recession. Little did I realize we'd get the trifecta.
There's 14 different speeches in which he has used the trifecta joke, which a lot of people consider rather tasteless. And here's what's particularly interesting. Where did the trifecta, where did this come from? Well, it turns out there actually is a quote of a candidate in 2000 saying, and I quote, "Barring an economic reversal, a national emergency, or a foreign crisis, we should balance the budget this year, next year, and every year," end quote. That was Al Gore speaking before the Economic Club of Detroit. He also said it in speeches in June and in November. But George Bush never said it. And now, to compound the curiosity, the 14 news releases on the website at whitehouse.gov all have links on them to video and audio clips where you can hear what you just heard, except they've all been scrubbed. This is an old clip that we've had they've taken them down. And I think it might have something to do with the growing questions about George Bush's veracity. Which brings us to the question, when is it appropriate? For example, when Tim Russert was interrogating Richard Clark on Meet the Press on the 28th of March, this last weekend, as he was feeding Clark the attacks from the Republicans, verbatim, and Clark did an admirable job of responding to them, in my opinion, across the bottom of the screen flashed the word liar. Clark is a liar, says, you know, something to the effect of Clark is a liar, says Charles Krauthammer. Krauthammer. This conservative. So while he's on the screen, they're scrolling the word liar underneath his face, being Richard Clark. Now, you know, that, but we hold our, we, the press treats presidents in a different way. John Kerry, for example, when he made the comment, this is the most crooked, you know, the most lying group I've ever seen. The whole press was like, what? What did he say? How, you know, is it lying? You can't say that. What? And Nat Perry wrote a great piece about this. It's on consortiumnews.com. And he just, you know, lays these things out step by step. On March 22nd, the Wall Street Journal had a lead story. Detailed picture of U.S. actions on 9/11 remains elusive. And it's really quite remarkable what the Wall Street Journal lays out without ever using the L word. I'll share that with you right after this break. This is the Tom Hartman radio program, 20 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
In my country, a group of religious extremists are reshaping the government to promote their own agenda and morality.
The government can keep a list of everyone I call, and they do not need a judge's permission.
Our citizens are seized and held in prison without being charged of a crime, without the right to a trial, and without a lawyer. Why should you care about what is happening to my country? Because my country is the United States of America.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective. Formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection, The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report.
If British researchers in continuing education did their math correctly, those who enter the workforce 20 years from now can expect to work in 19 different jobs over their lifetime. Not only that, the number of people working two or more jobs is expected to double by 2025. Those projections are heavily influenced by two factors, a rising life expectancy coupled with underfunded pensions and individual retirement savings.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000. $1,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the Pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
And welcome back. 25 minutes past the hour. Tom Hartman here with you. The Wall Street Journal on March 22nd had a lead story by Scott Paltrow in which it laid out six specific deceptions, misstatements, who knows. Let's say that where George Bush or his administration didn't quite go along with the truth. For example, on December 4th, he was down in Orlando, Florida, and he told a town hall meeting. And this was just a couple of months, September, October, November, December, 3 months, almost, you know, to the week anyway, 3 months after 9/11. And he's down in Florida, and he says, and I quote, this is George Bush speaking, "I was sitting outside the classroom waiting to go in, and I saw an airplane hit the tower. The TV was obviously on, and I used to fly myself, and I said, well, there's one terrible pilot." And, of course, the crowd laughs. But the Wall Street Journal looked into the story and discovered two interesting things. One, the TV in the room where Bush was waiting to go into the classroom was unplugged. And two, the footage of that first plane hitting the first tower did not become available to news agencies until that evening. And he was saying basically that he got this thing in real time. And it's just simply not true. So the Wall Street Journal lays it out. Hey, it's not true. I mean, they didn't use those words. They just, you know, let the facts speak for themselves. Another error of fact, as it were, around 9/11. After the second tower was hit, Bush is sitting in the classroom. Andrew Card comes in and whispers to him, "A second plane hit the second tower, Mr. President. America's under attack." Now, Bush's account and Andrew Card's account is that the president immediately excused himself from the classroom and pulled his staff together and took decisive action. And you see this in the made-for-TV movie about 9/11. In fact, Andrew Card said, quote, "Not that many seconds later, the president excused himself from the classroom and we gathered in the holding room and talked about the situation," end quote. But if you look at an uncut piece of video on that, you see that George Bush sat for at least 7 more minutes with the kids in this classroom, asking them questions about this little story, the story about the little goats. Now, he has since said, well, you know, I didn't want to alarm the kids. But wait a minute, America's under attack? Another thing that George Bush has said is that he was the one who raised the level of DEFCON 3. This was another town, that same town hall meeting in Orlando. He said, and I quote, "One of the first acts I did was put our military on alert." Turns out, as the Wall Street Journal pointed out, George Bush did not put the military on alert. It was General Richard Myers, who at that time was the acting head of the Joint Chiefs of Staff. Instead, George Bush got on Air Force One and fled to, Nebraska? No, first to Louisiana, then to Nebraska. And had some. There's an interesting story about that, too, which I'll share with you right after we come back from this break. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 29 minutes past the hour. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
On December 10th, the Bush administration joined 45 states, warning Americans not to eat fish with high mercury levels that can cause birth defects and learning disabilities. But days later, the administration said it wanted to give power plants permission to shower more mercury onto our lakes and streams for 10 years longer than the law allows. Sound fishy? Mr. President, there's a better way to strengthen the State of the Union. Protect us, not the polluters who contributed to your campaign. Enforce the Clean Air Act.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. There may be another grocery worker strike. 29,000 United Food and Commercial Workers International Union members, ranging from cashiers to meat cutters in the Baltimore, D.C. area, will see their contract expire tonight unless the UFCW, Safeway, and Giant Foods come to an agreement over the cost of health care benefits. Giant and Safeway officials say they can't compete with low-wage, no-benefit non-union stores like Walmart, but have arranged to hire more than 3,000 temporary employees in the event of a strike.
A lawsuit charging Chevron Texaco with human rights abuses in Nigeria will move forward over the company's objections. That's what a federal judge in San Francisco ruled last week. Chevron Texaco's used Nigerian military forces to provide security for its drilling rigs and pumping stations, and at times, these rented soldiers fired on citizens. This particular lawsuit was brought on behalf of those killed during military maneuvers conducted at the behest of a Chevron subsidiary in 1998 and 1999. A key aspect of this latest ruling is that evidence linking some of the killings to soldiers working in a direct capacity for Chevron Texaco provides a strong argument that the company could be held liable in those deaths. There's still a long way to go in the case, though. A full trial isn't expected until the middle of next year at the very earliest.
Show us the jobs!
The AFL-CIO-sponsored Show Us the Jobs tour is in full swing. Workers from each state in the union are traveling through 8 states highlighting America's job crisis. According to the AFL-CIO, each day more than 85,000 American workers lose their jobs. Edgar Moore is a tour participant.
We've been trained to think that if you give a good day's work or a good day's pay, you'll be all right. The company will look after you. Well, now we know that that's a lie.
The tour continues through this week towards its final stop in Washington, D.C.
Some bad blood brewing between auto workers unions in the U.S. and Canada. The Canadian auto workers are unhappy with the United Auto Workers' establishment of an organizing office in Ontario near 2 non-union Toyota assembly factories. The CAW says Canadian workers need Canadian unions. The UAW denies it's engaged in member poaching.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Throughout history, some jobs stay and some go. IBM researchers think they've found the 4 qualities that make jobs last in an era of employment extinction. Flexibility, teamwork, face-to-face interaction with customers, and routines that can't be automated give jobs legs. Translation may be the next job swept into the dustbin of history with audio conversion software. Of course, some jobs are expected to withstand the test of time, like doctors, lawyers, and news reporters.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Tom Hartman Program.
And I've been walking, talking, believing the things that are true.
And welcome back. Exposing the con and conservative. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 26 minutes before the hour. We're looking at George Bush has just cut a deal with the 9/11 commission where if Condoleezza Rice gets thrown to the wolves, if she has to testify under oath, under penalty of perjury in public, then Bush and Clinton and Cheney will not have to testify. So it's interesting to go back and look at some of the things that they have said about 9/11 to which they might be asked, you know, to might be held to account. For example, they have said that there was this threat to Air Force One. That's the reason why Air Force One left Florida and then went to Louisiana and then left Louisiana and went to Nebraska and didn't finally make its way back to the White House until 4 p.m. was because there was a credible threat against White House against Air Force One. So they were basically, you know, trying to outrun the bad guys. Well, White House spokesman Dan Bartlett is now on the record as saying, no, there was no credible threat. We have no evidence of that. Of course, you can, you know, to cut him a little slack, you can say, okay, the country's under attack, the president gets scared. That's a reasonable reaction. I mean, that's a very human reaction. But they continue to say that, like, for example, Karl Rove explained political advisor, this from Nat Perry's piece, Bush and the L-Word. Political advisor Karl Rove said there were still reports about civilian airliners, jetliners, aloft until 4 p.m. and thus still a threat to Air Force One. However, according to the FAA, they informed the White House and the Pentagon at noon, at 12:16 p.m., that, number one, there were no more hijacked planes in the air, and number two, there were no commercial planes of any sort in U.S. airspace. So, you know, a few things here. Now, you know, one of the more recent ones that really gets me, that really just kind of amazes me, is the situation with regard to the inspectors. Before George Bush invaded Iraq, he made the claim repeatedly that Saddam Hussein had thrown the inspectors out of Iraq during the Clinton administration, and a claim that was vigorously, constantly, like a mantra, repeated by the faux news various entertainers. And in fact, you know, the record shows that Bill Clinton asked the UN to pull the inspectors out of Iraq because he intended to bomb the few sites left that Osama seemed to be hiding from them. And he did. And then, of course, the UN sent inspectors back in. And did Iraq throw them out? Did Iraq say, no, you can't have inspectors here? No. In fact, what happened was Saddam Hussein's head of his military called a press conference. I mean, you probably saw it on TV. It was repeated endlessly for a couple of days. Called a press conference, and this was repeated then by his UN guy, his ambassador to the United Nations, and said, we have nothing to hide. We have destroyed all our weapons of mass destruction. We welcome the UN inspectors. They can go anywhere they want without any restrictions. And in fact, Hans Blix came back and testified before the United Nations that that was the case, that they had encountered no resistance anywhere. So the UN had the inspectors in, and Saddam never said, you got to pull your inspectors out. He never said it. In fact, he kept asking for the inspectors to stay there because he was going to make the case. He said, I'll prove to you. He provided the White House with 14,000 pages of information on weapons of mass destruction. The White House redacted, you know, blacked out about 9,000 of those pages, probably the ones about which weapons were sold to Saddam by George Bush Sr. and Donald Rumsfeld back in the late 80s. And then provided the remaining 5,000 pages to our allies. and claimed that everything wasn't accounted for. But Saddam was saying, fine, if you think that there's anything here, you're welcome to look anywhere. He was trying to get the sanctions lifted. But what did George Bush say about this after the fact? Again, this is very troubling to me, frankly.
Subsequent to the peace speech, the CIA had some doubts.
Now, this, the first part of this, by the way, let me just start this over. The first part of this, George Bush is responding. He's asked a question that didn't even have anything to do with the inspectors. He's asked the question, why did you put the story about the uranium from Niger in your State of the Union speech when, according to Joe Wilson, it was a lie? And now we've had George Tenet testify under oath that there was, that the CIA had tried to advise the Bush administration, or had advised the Bush administration, that there was, to the best of their knowledge, no uranium coming from Africa to Iraq. So that's the question that was asked Bush. But note, there's two answers here. And actually, I think both of them are worthy of note.
Subsequent to the peace speech, the CIA had some doubts. But when I gave the, talked about the speech, when they looked at the speech, it was cleared. Otherwise, I wouldn't have put it in the speech. I'm not interested in talking about intelligence unless it's cleared by the CIA.
And in fact, we know now that the CIA is not, as I believe it was Tenet who said, the CIA is not in the business of clearing presidential speeches.
Director Tenet said it was cleared by the CIA. The larger point is, and the fundamental question is...
And here we get to the big one, the whopper.
Does Saddam Hussein have a weapons program? And the answer is absolutely.
That's not the whopper. It's still coming.
And we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let him in.
Say what? Say that again, George. I mean, that is really...
And we gave him a chance to allow the inspectors in, and he wouldn't let them in. And therefore, after a reasonable request, we decided to remove him from power along with other nations so as to make sure he was not a threat to the United States.
Yeah. So, here you've got this pattern. Now, what's particularly interesting to me is that the Bush administration, or the Bush campaign in 2000, with the help of the mainstream media, did a really, really pretty good job of portraying Al Gore as a liar. They never used the L word, the lie word, to the best of my knowledge. Actually, there may have been a case. There was one case, I think, where they did. But did he invent the Internet? Well, it turns out Gore never actually even said that. Oh, here's the Washington Times. Of course, this is Reverend Moon's newspaper, but it's the only one that George Bush reads when he rarely reads the newspaper. Quote, Republicans have begun calling Mr. Kerry, now this is moving on, the international man of mystery, and said his statements go even beyond those of former Vice President Al Gore, who was besieged by stories that he lied or exaggerated throughout the 2000 presidential campaign. And in fact, you go back, and there really aren't any. I mean, it's, Al Gore was just, a pretty straight shooter. So at what point is it appropriate for the mainstream press to call the president a liar? If you got thoughts on this, our number is 1-866-889-8894. I have no problem with saying these are lies. But as I said, I'm not the mainstream press. At what point should we as citizens start leaning on, our media outlets, as the Republicans did aggressively in trying to portray and paint Al Gore as a liar? At what point do we do this? Here Richard Clark has come forward, White House spokesman. This again from the article by Nat Perry. Well, let me back up here. After George Bush received a briefing on August 6th of 2001 at his ranch in Crawford, Texas, which this briefing was about a threat from Al-Qaeda inside the United States. What did George Bush do right after he read that briefing? He went fishing and continued a month-long vacation. Now, National Security Advisor Condoleezza Rice said on May 12, 2002, in a briefing, that he put a, you know, this was a heroic action on his part, that he was alert to the danger and was demanding bureaucratic action. Rice's story, however, has since been contradicted. This quoting from Nat Perry's article, the CIA informed the 9/11 Commission in mid-March 2004 that the briefing's author didn't recall a request from Bush for the report, and that the idea of the briefing generated from inside the CIA, not from inside the Oval Office. So, you know, at what point do we begin to call a lie a lie? 1-866-889-8894. Thomas in Grand Rapids, Michigan is on the line. Hey, Thomas.
Hi, Mr. Hartman. Thank you for allowing me to get on your show there.
Sure. Is that Thomas or Tomas?
I'm a conservative, so I probably won't be agreeing with you too much here, but I'm trying to be civil.
That's great. I'll do the same.
I think that the whole weapons of mass destruction is a moot point now, because I see the Republicans as having taken care of that. There's no doubt anymore, you see. I mean, no one can say they're there anymore, because we know they're not there, and we know Saddam Hussein is not going to use them.
So what do you say to the parents of the people of the kid who used to live up the street from me here, who's now dead in Iraq, about why we went in there? What do you say to them?
All right, I'm assuming
they're mourning their son, Thomas.
Right?
Yeah, he was a Marine. He died in Iraq.
All right.
What do you say to them?
And you know, that's what Marines do. I mean, you know, we are sent into combat, and being that he was a volunteer, okay, and being that Iraq was put on the states that sponsor terrorist list by the Democratic administration and has been on there for 10 years.
Along with about 20 other states, Thomas, and none of them were invaded by us. And yet many of them pose a much greater threat to the United States. I mean, what do you say to the family of that young man about the decisions that were made by this president and this administration? You say, oh, well, gee, there was no weapons of mass destruction. I guess, you know, it's a moot point.
You know, like
he's dead.
This country, Iraq, was sponsoring terrorism. It had links. Matter of fact,
wait a second. It was not sponsoring terrorism.
All right. Well, that's what the Clinton administration said. It was a state that sponsored terrorism.
Yeah, back in the 90s. Sure, there was some evidence of that. Let me just agree with you on one point. Saddam Hussein was sending $25,000 to every suicide bomber in Palestine or Gaza in Israel, whenever somebody did that. So to that extent, he was sponsoring terrorism. And that's the thing that everybody points to. See, he really was sponsoring terrorism. Well, that's chicken feed compared to what a dozen other states are doing around the world.
Well, I would refer you to Mr. Clark's recent testimony, where Mr. Clark said that one of the people that helped in the bombing, that was an integral part of bombing of the World Trade Center the first time when the Democrats were in power, was an Iraqi who fled to Iraq. And Mr. Clark had the audacity to stand up and say, we couldn't get him because Iraq would not extradite him.
Right. Well, we couldn't. I mean, it's a truthful statement.
How can you say that?
There was a Saudi who fled to Saudi. There were a number of people who lived in other countries who were participated in that thing and went back home. I mean,
that shows you the difference between how Democrats react to war. And Republicans. Democrats try to extradite them, and Republicans come out with an ultimatum and say, you will give us this man, or we will go in there and take him.
So you think we should have... So, Thomas, let me get this straight. You think that because this guy was involved in the truck bomb in the World Trade Center, that we should have killed 20,000 Iraqi civilians, 600 American soldiers, and let somewhere between 3,000 and 10,000 American soldiers lose their arms, legs, and eyes in order to get this guy back? Is that what you're telling me?
If we would have done that,
the world would be laughing at us, and we would be guilty of a crime, an international crime. That's going after a fly with a shotgun, Thomas. Come on.
Let's have a little logic here. I don't call 9/11 a fly.
I'm not talking about 9/11, and neither are you right now.
I'm saying Well, I'm just trying to say that if we had reacted in 1993 the way we reacted in 2001, maybe 2001 would not have happened.
Well, Bill Clinton sent 60 cruise missiles into Afghanistan to try and kill Osama bin Laden. And what did the Republicans say when he did that?
I guess they said that he didn't send enough.
No, they said that he was doing it to distract us from Monica Lewinsky and that he shouldn't do it anymore. They called it the wag the dog.
Politics there. They're going to fight each other, you know.
Yeah.
But listen, I've taken enough of your time. I want to thank you for the opportunity.
You're welcome to call anytime, Thomas. Thanks. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. Jerry in North Carolina is on the line. Hey, Jerry, got about a half a minute here.
Hey, how are you doing?
I'm great.
I'm trying to remember who the congressman that stood up in front of the TV cameras and said that lying to the American people when they were trying to impeach Bill Clinton, that simply lying was reason for impeachment.
Oh, there's six of them, six Republicans. I used to have I've got a list of them around here someplace. I'll see if I can dig it up. But six different Republican congressmen stood up and said, if a president lies, he should be impeached. Absolutely. Good point, Jerry. Thanks. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. Stay tuned.
Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Bottled water does not necessarily mean better water. I'm Steve Pomplin for Earthwatch Radio. A typical label on a plastic water bottle uses terms such as pure, glacial, and unpolluted. Brian Howard recently investigated the quality of bottled water for E! Magazine. He says it's a self-regulated industry and labels can be misleading.
Most of the language like pure, natural, glacial, pristine, all those words are unregulated. So people sort of take it for granted. They just think, oh, well, if it's someone went to the trouble of bottling it up, then, you know, it must be more pure.
Howard says consumers drink bottled water because they think it's safer. But he says as much as 40% of bottled water originates from a tap. And he says bottled water is not under the same strict regulations as normal tap water.
One of the reasons people drink bottled water is because they believe it's going to be cleaner than their tap water. So they're really replacing their tap water with bottled water. But the industry doesn't want to admit that. They say that they're providing a convenience of food. So it's not regulated by the Environmental Protection Agency.
In 1999, the National Resources Defense Council conducted a study of 103 different brands of bottled water. A quarter of them were contaminated by bacteria, arsenic, or chemicals at levels that exceeded California state standards. Howard says, unlike municipal water utilities, bottled water companies do not have to supply water quality data to the public. And he says bottlers can destroy their records after 2 years. Howard says consumers have difficulty knowing just how pure their bottled water actually is. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Gaylord Nelson Institute and the Sea Grant Program at the University of Wisconsin.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. It's Talk Radio for the Rest of America, the Tom Hartman Radio Program. I've got the Republican quotes. They're amazing. From Henry Hyde, James Sensenbrenner, Steve Cabot, Steve Beyer, Representative Lindsey Graham. I think I'll share those with you at the top of the next hour. We got a bunch of callers here. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, 1-866-889-8894. And Sterling in Georgia is on the line. Hey, Sterling, welcome to the show.
Hi, Tom. I've got to tell you, I'm just horrified. You asked the question, when should the media confront the president about his lies? I want to know why the media hasn't already confronted the president. You let Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky engage in inappropriate behavior, and that should be between them and Hillary Clinton. Instead, we heard about it ad nauseum. Here
in
we have a president sending our troops out to die. 500 Americans dead. How many Iraqis have been slaughtered so far? And we're going to look aside. And like the caller you had a few minutes ago who said he was a conservative and hoped you could agree, and how smug he was, and how our party has proven that there are no weapons of mass destruction. I'm just infuriated. I'm beside myself. It's time for an American revolution.
Yeah. Well, and in America these days, those happen at the ballot box, and and your opportunity is coming.
And I can assure you, I will be there with bells on.
There you go. Okay, thank you. Thanks for the call, Sterling. I appreciate it. Good to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. Nick in Grand Rapids is on the line. Hey, Nick, we got about a minute left.
Yes, real quick here. I'm actually a service member. I'm in the National Guard myself. And I would probably disagree with that previous caller who was the conservative in that, you know, I wouldn't look at so lightly the sacrifices of our soldiers. And even myself and my wife, we've weighed it and realized how, you know, what a sacrifice it is for the soldiers and the families. And for me, I would be willing to make that sacrifice because I think it is a worthy cause. I do believe that we're, spreading American democracy and freedom throughout the Middle East and the world, and I think that's a worthy cause.
Yeah, well, okay. If that, you know, but see, that wasn't the debate, and that's not how this war got sold to us, Nick, and that's my concern. I mean, that's a legitimate debate. Should we have a footprint in the Middle East? And
that actually wasn't the point that I was just trying to follow up from the last caller.
Yeah, okay. I appreciate it. Thanks a lot. We got a boogie here.
Okay.
Thanks for the call. It's the Tom Hartman Radio Program, where we dare to ask, is Walmart a person? And we dare to answer, no.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Had to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. The chairman and vice chairman of the independent commission investigating the September 11th attack said Monday that they would ask Condoleezza Rice to testify under oath in any future questioning because of discrepancies between her statements and those made in sworn testimony by President Bush's former counterterrorism chief. I would like to have her testimony under penalty of perjury, said the commission's chairman, Thomas Kane, the former Republican governor of New Jersey, in comments that reflected the panel's exasperation with the White House and Ms. Rice, the president's national security advisor. A voter survey tied to Republican effort to raise money for House candidates mislabels Thailand and the Philippines as countries that harbor and aid terrorists, say officials from both governments. A question on the National Republican Congressional Committee's Ask America 2004 Nationwide Policy Survey asks, should America broaden the war on terrorism into other countries that harbor and aid terrorists, such as Thailand, Syria, Somalia, the Philippines, etc.? Officials from both nations say the question came as a surprise since the Bush administration has praised their countries for their roles in the anti-terror war. With U.S. retail gasoline prices at a record high, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry on Tuesday will propose a new policy to reduce fuel costs, igniting a political fight over how much Americans pay at the pump. Blaming the spike on the failed policies of Republican President Bush, a former Texas oil man, Kerry would pressure oil-producing nations to increase production and temporarily suspend filling the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve, campaign aides said. Kerry chose San Diego, which has the highest gas prices in the country, $2.12 for a gallon of regular unleaded, to lay out his proposals. Alistair Cook, the broadcaster who epitomized highbrow television as host of Masterpiece Theater and whose Letter from America was a radio fixture in Britain for 58 years, has died, the British Broadcasting Corporation said Tuesday. He was 95. Cook died at his home in New York at midnight, a spokesman for the BBC's press office said. No cause of death was given, but Cook had retired earlier this month because of heart disease. More news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A Texas woman heating fish sticks was shot in the leg by a .357 caliber handgun that had been stashed in her oven by a friend, police said. Roxanne Perez was taken to a local hospital where she was in good condition, police said on Friday. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Sometimes when I see those in power pull some political action that's stupid, I say to myself, what were they thinking? But a recent action by the Bushites is so obtuse, so blindingly stupid, that you can only conclude that no thought at all was involved, that no one with the brain power of a single-cell amoeba could have been consulted on such a perverse decision. The Bush incident revolved around a bit of political fluff that the White House tried to foist on us last Labor Day. With his jobs record rivaling Herbert Hoover's, and with every industry from manufacturing to high-tech sending hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs offshore, Bush's political handlers decided that he needed to do something. Not really do something in the sense of stopping our country's middle-class bleeding, but appear to do something. So, George announced that he was creating, ta-da, a new Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing. Big whoopee. A new bureaucrat to do what? To be a cheerleader and provide political cover, of course. That was stupid. But then came stupid on steroids. 6 months after announcing this position, Bush finally got around to appointing his new manufacturing czar. It was Anthony Raimondo, a Bush campaign contributor and the CEO of a manufacturing outfit in Nebraska. Fine. Since he's from the biz, he might have an actual idea about how to stop offshoring. But no. Guess who had recently fired 75 of his own corporation's U.S. workers and built a new factory in China to employ 180 workers? Yes, Anthony, our new czar. This is Jim Hightower saying, this was too embarrassing, even for Bush's White House of big blunders, so Anthony's name was withdrawn. But it shows how clueless the Bushites are. As Senator Charles Schumer put it, this White House is so bad at jobs, it can't even fill the one it created.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
Calling for a rapid and radical return to the old values that made America great, the values of democracy on which this country was founded, here's Tom Hartman.
There's an old saying in Tennessee, I know it's in Texas, probably in Tennessee, that says, fool me once, shame on you. If you fool me, can't get fooled again.
And welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. 6 minutes past the hour, 7 minutes past the hour. Our program live, coast to coast, border to border. Beaming out of radio stations all across the nation. Streaming down from outer space on the Sirius satellite radio system. And transmitted around the world in real time by radiopower.org, which also rebroadcasts it at selected times. Anyhow, our question for the hour, when is it appropriate for the mainstream press to call the president a liar? Now, this is an issue that the Republicans have thought about at some length, and perhaps even beyond just the simple question of when should the mainstream press call the president a liar. Henry Hyde of Illinois said, and I quote, there is a visibility factor in the president's public acts, and those which betray a trust or reveal contempt for the law are hard to sweep under the rug. They reverberate, they ricochet all over the land, and provide the worst possible example for our young people. Representative Congressman James Sensenbrenner, Republican of Wisconsin. And I quote, "The truth is still the truth, and a lie is still a lie, and the rule of law should apply to everyone, no matter what excuses are made by the president's defenders. We have done so because of our devotion to the rule of law and our fear that if the president does not suffer the legal and constitutional consequences of his actions, the impact of allowing the president to stand above the law will be felt for generations to come. Laws not enforced are open invitations for more serious and more criminal behavior." Congressman Steve Cabot of Illinois, of Ohio. Quote, "It would be wrong for you to tell America's children that some lies are all right. It would be wrong to show the rest of the world." Congressman Steve Beyer, Republican of Indiana. "I have also heard some senators from both sides of the aisle state publicly, I think these offenses rise to the level of high crimes and misdemeanors. Now, to state publicly that you believe that high crimes and misdemeanors have occurred, but for some reason you think you have this desire not to remove the president, that desire, though, does not square with the law, the Constitution, and the Senate's precedents for removing federal judges for similar offenses, such as lying." And Representative Lindsey Graham, Republican of South Carolina, now Senator Lindsey Graham. "The President of the United States sits atop the legal pyramid. If there's reasonable doubt about his ability to faithfully execute the laws of the land, our future would be better if that individual is removed. And let me tell you where it all comes down for me. If you can go back and explain to your children and your constituents how you can be truthful and misleading at the same time, good luck." Republican Senator Lindsey Graham. 1-866-889-8894. At what point, having documented, I think in rather excruciating detail, the Wall Street Journal last week, lies by George Bush, at what point should the mainstream media be saying these are lies rather than using euphemisms? Robert in Michigan is on the line. Hey, Robert, welcome to the program. Oh, I'm sorry, that's Nick. Line six dropped. Hey, Nick, welcome to the Tom Hartman Show.
Hi, Tom.
Yeah.
Hi, thanks for taking me again. I was actually at the end of the last hour, and I really didn't get to share anything.
Okay.
Other than just introducing myself. I was going to bring up a topic on the what you had shared a little bit earlier about the 9/11 Commission. And I'm a little bit discouraged about the purpose for this commission, because it seems like, you know, in the days shortly after September 11th, that the commission had noble purposes.
Actually, in the days after September 11th, the commission didn't exist. This administration
fought
it tooth and nail.
In the period afterward. But it was initially, it was a bipartisan thing. It was meant to look forward into what changes we can make to make things better instead of looking backward and pointing fingers and that sort of thing.
Well, how can you make policy for the future without looking back on how policy failed in the past?
Of course, you have to look back. I totally agree.
Okay.
But I'm just thinking, it seems to me that the purpose has been very politicized, and it's become a finger-pointing. It's sort of like if something bad happens in your family, you don't talk about those past things.
So Nick, are you suggesting
to point fingers and point blame, but to see what we can do to move
forward.
Sure,
I understand. So you're suggesting that when people went before the 9/11 Commission and said that the Bush administration made mistakes, that it was wrong for the Bush administration to then ferociously go after them with personal attacks and vitriol and call them liars and things like that?
I think there's plenty of room for, to talk about our mistakes. I think that's the point, to talk about the mistakes.
Yeah.
But, but to politicize it,
this administration has just absolutely incredibly politicized these things. I mean,
right.
it's mind-boggling.
The other main question I had was, I think we need to give some credit at least to the Condoleezza Rice, Bush Cheney, to at least, for at least they're testifying, and it seems like...
But none of them have testified under oath, Nick.
And Clinton...
Nick, none of them have testified under oath. They've all refused to testify under oath.
Testifying either at all.
No, Gore and Clinton are both testifying, and they're both testifying under oath.
But are they doing it publicly and all that?
As far as I know, that's what's scheduled.
I don't know. You might want to check on that.
Okay, I may be wrong.
Yeah.
I may be wrong, but
okay. Yeah.
Well, let's find, I'll find out, and I'll report back. Nick, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894 is our telephone number. And let's see. Dave in California is on line two here. Hey, Dave, welcome to the show.
Tom, it is so refreshing to hear your program. I've committed myself to the 2 hours they allow it up here every day. But we have a president in office through deception, through vote rigging, by all kinds of ploys there from the Supreme Court. He never should have been allowed to take office, but he was, and he should have been impeached, but he hasn't been. He's continued these patterns of deception and exploitation, deceit.
Well, hang on a second, Dave. Why do you think he should have been impeached?
Because I do not believe he was legally elected. I do believe, I have reason to believe factually, that the votes in Arkansas, Tennessee, and Florida were all that were on voting machines. All of those were rigged.
Well, you don't have to go that far. I mean, it's a matter of public record that Catherine Harris, polled some 80,000 to 90,000 citizens who were legal voters in Florida in primarily black and Democratic districts off the rolls, doing this merge purge with his company in Texas. They spent, the state had never spent more than $1,000 in any one year ever before in its history to clean up its voting roll. And suddenly, 6 months before the 2000 election, Catherine Harris is spending $3.5 to $4 million with a Texas company to compare the because it's illegal for felons to vote in Florida, to compare the list of Florida voters in these areas with felons from Texas. I mean, just let's pick a state. Well, how about Texas? There's lots of felons there. And it's just, yeah. That I mean, if you want voter fraud, that's enough for me.
Yeah, well,
I mean,
this man is in office illegally, I think.
But see, I don't think that's a reason to impeach him. I mean,
they tried to impeach an excellent predecessor of his on the fact that he had an overactive libido and tried to deny it.
Yeah, no, they tried to impeach Bill Clinton because he lied under oath.
Yes.
Frankly, he shouldn't have lied under oath. I mean,
he shouldn't have done that, but I mean, I think tell me any senator, congressman that would have got caught on some little sexual misdeed.
No, I'm not disagreeing that the Republicans blew that all out of proportion, but I am saying that ultimately the decision whether or not to impeach and the decision whether or not to remove from office is held by the House of Representatives to impeach and the Senate to remove from office. And the House of Representatives chose to impeach Clinton and the Senate chose not to, and that's democracy at work. And hey, it's water over the bridge now.
But it is, I think, for allowing this president to take office. I think they all knew that he didn't legally deserve it, that he hadn't, even with the rigging and whatnot, ended up with a majority. I do believe that every congressman and senator who should have done something about
this. But Dave, this is ancient history. What do you think about whether mainstream newspapers should be using the word liar to apply to the President of the United States?
I believe you, Tom Hartman, are such a refreshing exception to the media that, yes, of course they should be exposing what is going on. A lot of people, and you even get some of them calling you, are going to be dumb enough to go in and try to repeat this atrocity.
Yeah, okay.
They don't know enough because the media is not alerting them to it.
Okay.
No, they should be calling what it is, the reality of what we have.
Yeah, and what we have is somebody who's not telling the truth. Dave, thank you very much for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. And let's see. Josh in New Jersey's on the line. Hey, Josh, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hey, Tom, how's it going there?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up?
Good deal. Well, I'm afraid the comment I had was a little off topic, but I wanted to go ahead and say it, if you don't mind.
That's fine.
You said something yesterday that really stuck in my mind, and I've kind of been thinking about it. The idea that the neoconservative ideology and the members of that ideology are a cult. And I thought, that makes a lot of sense, and maybe the nation would best be served if we approach the phenomenon of neoconservatism as a mental health crisis.
Yeah, you could.
I mean, it might help us sort everything out,
Yeah.
That was about it. As far as the mainstream media goes, it does seem like they sort of go limp when it's time to pick on the big Republican types.
Yeah.
That way to me.
Well, you know, here's the flip side of that is that the mainstream media didn't explicitly, in my recollection, didn't call Bill Clinton a liar either. And so, you know, there's something to be said for, at some level, respecting the office of the presidency, even if the guy who has the office you don't respect. You know what I mean? There's really two issues there.
A need for respect for the office, that's to be sure.
Okay. All righty. Thanks a lot for the call. Good to hear from you, Josh. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. And we have, let's see, is this Allie in New Mexico?
Hi. Hello.
Hi, Allie. Got about a minute here.
I was just wondering why the media picks up on Howard Dean's scream, and then the comment that Kerry made over the mic when he thought it was off. But when George Bush made that comment at the media correspondents' dinner and sort of joked about the fact of going to war when our men and women are dying there, that's not played over and over again. I don't understand how anybody can say the media is such a liberal media when they don't pick up on something as disgusting as what the president did.
Yeah. Okay, good point, Allie. Thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. I'd say, you know, just in quick answer to you, we don't have a liberal media in the United States. I mean, you're listening to it. This is the Tom Hartman radio program. 20 minutes after the hour. We'll be back.
What does corporate power have to do with disarmament? How does working for racial justice affect trade agreements? And what do they all have to do with the Cuban blockade? Having trouble making a connection? It's our specialty. The Women's International League for Peace and Freedom, for 88 years, connecting the issues for democracy and social justice. Why don't you connect with us? WILPF.org. Or call 215-563-7110.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. Its clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order 2 bottles of CarboBlocker, you'll get 2 bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive 2 free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value, absolutely free. So call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back, and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide, and you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. According to Solutions for Progress Incorporated, American workers are 81% more productive today than they were in 1968, and corporate profits are 39% higher when adjusted for inflation. But minimum wage workers earn nearly 40% less than their counterparts did a generation ago. The lowest paid workers received $1.65 an hour in 1968, the equivalent of $8.45 in 2003.
Hey, how you doing? Got a quick question.
Yeah?
Who was Rudolf Nureyev?
Rudy Nureyev.
Rudy.
Okay, I know this one.
Good.
Wasn't he a... Nureyev?
Nureyev.
Wasn't he a defenseman for the Maple Leafs?
Sure about that?
could have been a goalie.
Yeah. Hey, hi, how you doing? Who was Louis Armstrong?
That's easy. He was the first guy on the moon.
Really?
You know, one small step for man.
Sure, one giant leap for Louis. Hey, young lady.
Uh-huh.
Does the name Caravaggio mean anything to you?
Wasn't he the guy that went out with that mob guy's sister until he got whacked?
You know, no.
Are your kids as well-rounded as they could be? Kids who participate in the arts do better in school and in life. To learn more about the value of arts education, visit AmericansForTheArts.org. Because all kids should get to appreciate Nureyev's dance, Armstrong's horn, and Caravaggio's brush. Art. Ask for more. A public service message brought to you by Americans for the Arts and the Ad Council.
Fearlessly exploring the truth of the day, here's Tom Hartman.
Lock up your husband, lock up your sons, lock up your whiskey cabinets, girls, lock up your guns, lock up the beauty shop, and no telling if they've heard the news. Call the boys downtown and even Marcus, tell them lock up them high-heeled shoes. When God-fearing women get the blues.
Welcome back to the Real Free Speech Zone. It's the Tom Hartman radio program. When is it appropriate for the mainstream press, is it ever appropriate to call the president a liar? Or should they simply say, well, as the Wall Street Journal did last week, well, you know, he said these things and they don't seem to have any correspondence with reality, but to use the L word. You know, it's an interesting question. 1-866-889-8894 for your thoughts. And you know, in just a minute, I want to move along, too. I think one of the things that I find very interesting here is that just before the anthrax attacks, George Bush started taking Cipro. And now Judicial Watch is suing to find out why. We'll get to that in a minute. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to be on the program. Pat in Milan, New Mexico is on the line. Hey, Pat.
Hi, Tom. I'm pretty angry about all that's going on concerning Condoleezza Rice and her being questioned publicly. I have faith that they certainly know the questions to ask her and they know what they're doing, of course. But I'm wondering if you yourself know of any website or anything on the Internet where someone could get information of what they will be asking her. And does the public have any ability with the email to interject anything, suggest to the committee a question to be asked?
That's a real good question, Pat. The 9/11 victims' families had put together a set of questions that they wanted the commission to ask of Colin Powell and Donald Rumsfeld when they were under oath. And those questions were not asked. They were some tough questions. And it really wasn't until, and you know, basically the commission has been playing softball. And the reason they've been playing softball is because they've been, you know, these are all people who are kind of, you know, at the point in their careers where they don't want to make waves. They just want to get this thing done. And maybe we can learn something out of this. And maybe we can, you know, but it's really about the future. And it's not about, you know, assigning blame and all that kind of thing. You know, it's just kind of, let's all just be happy. You know, the Rodney King thing. And then Richard Clark comes along and kicks over the beehive. And says, you know, or, you know, beehive is probably the wrong metaphor, you know, kicks over the honeypot and says, hey, you know, this is something wrong here. And now they're having to ask these tough questions, you know, because Condi Rice has, in her private testimony, apparently already said things that contradict what Richard Clark says. And so that's what they want to ask her about. And it's going to be real interesting, but I have a feeling they're going to play softball with her. I think that every I think that most of the people on this commission, men and women on this commission, really just kind of want to move along and get out from underneath the free fire zone. So the bottom line is, in answer to your question, there is no way for us to supply those questions. If they had you know, a whole committee of people from the families, the victims' families, sitting in the room during the interrogation of Rumsfeld and Powell, and they had submitted these questions in writing to the members of the commission asking them to ask them, and those questions never got asked. So if they can't do it, I doubt you and I can. But thanks for the call, Pat.
All right.
Okay.
Could I interject one more thing to the listeners real quick?
You got 5 seconds.
I have a strong conviction that the defining time of whether Bush knew anything was going on was why he was in the schoolroom instead of the White House.
Yeah, that's an interesting point. Did he know? Here we go. This is Tom Hartman. Stay tuned.
Have you visited 100fires.com lately? If not, then you're missing out on thousands of books for a better world. Books about how you can make a difference, about the rights of workers, creating more livable communities, and about how we can stop large corporations from destroying our democracy. 100fires.com offers secure ordering, full searchability, gift certificates, and much, much more. That's 100fires.com. Books for a better world.
Pop and not-so-pop culture, democracy, and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. There may be another grocery worker strike. 29,000 United Food and Commercial Workers International Union members, ranging from cashiers to meat cutters in the Baltimore, D.C. area, will see their contract expire tonight unless the UFCW, Safeway, and Giant Foods come to an agreement over the cost of health care benefits. Giant and Safeway officials say they can't compete with low-wage, no-benefit non-union stores like Walmart, but have arranged to hire more than 3,000 temporary employees in the event of a strike.
A lawsuit charging Chevron Texaco with human rights abuses in Nigeria will move forward over the company's objections. That's what a federal judge in San Francisco ruled last week. Chevron Texaco's used Nigerian military forces to provide security for its drilling rigs and pumping stations, and at times, these rented soldiers fired on citizens. This particular lawsuit was brought on behalf of those killed during military maneuvers conducted at the behest of a Chevron subsidiary in 1998 and 1999. A key aspect of this latest ruling is that evidence linking some of the killings to soldiers working in a direct capacity for Chevron Texaco provides a strong argument that the company could be held liable in those deaths. There's still a long way to go in the case, though. A full trial isn't expected until the middle of next year at the very earliest.
Show us the jobs!
The AFL-CIO-sponsored Show Us the Jobs tour is in full swing. Workers from each state in the union are traveling through 8 states highlighting America's job crisis. According to the AFL-CIO, each day more than 85,000 American workers lose their jobs. Edgar Moore is a tour participant.
We've been trained to think that if you give a good day's work for a good day's pay, you'll be all right. The company will look after you. Well, now we know that that's a lie.
The tour continues through this week towards its final stop in Washington, D.C.
Some bad blood brewing between auto workers unions in the U.S. and Canada. The Canadian auto workers are unhappy with the United Auto Workers' establishment of an organizing office in Ontario near 2 non-union Toyota assembly factories. The CAW says Canadian workers need Canadian unions. The UAW denies it's engaged in member poaching.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Throughout history, some jobs stay and some go. IBM researchers think they've found the 4 qualities that make jobs last in an era of employment extinction. Flexibility, teamwork, face-to-face interaction with customers, and routines that can't be automated give jobs legs. Translation may be the next job swept into the dustbin of history with audio conversion software. Of course, some jobs are expected to withstand the test of time, like doctors, lawyers, and news reporters.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
Bringing democracy. democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
My father was an engineer. Won't you shed a tear for my yellow rose? My yellow rose and her bloodstained clothes. Her grandpa fought old Chiang Kai-shek, that no-good, low-down, dirty rat who used to order his troops to fire on the women and children. Imagine that.
Welcome back. Tom Hartman here with you. The Tom Hartman radio program. Republicans, well, White House spokesman Scott McClellan. Let me just jump ahead. The Washington Post danced around this issue in the fall of 2002. This was, you know, a year and a half ago. Washington Post wrote an article. And now, just catch the headline and subhead here. The headline is, in the Washington Post, "For Bush, facts are malleable." And the subhead is, "Presidential tradition of embroidering key assertions continues." Like this is like lying to the American people, some noble tradition that presidents have been doing since George Washington. Well, you know, the reality is that they probably have been. But at what point do we stand up and say, you know, no? Anyhow, 1-866-889-8894. The lines are lit up, as they say. Let's see. That was Pat, so this must be Richard in Eureka, California. Hey, Richard.
Hi, Tom. How are you doing today?
I'm great, but I'll get better. What's up, Richard?
Okay, I'm glad to hear that. Listen, I have two things to comment about on the 9/11 Commission and Tommaso, or Thomas, the conservative caller earlier, he mentioned something about when they first tried to bring the towers down during Clinton's administration. I'd like to point out that that was, about 38 days into his first term?
Was it? I wasn't keeping track. That's interesting.
Yeah. Also, is the 9/11 Commission even going to look at any of the facts, pertaining to that incident? And also, I wonder how Ted Olson feels about the fact that Ashcroft was warned about the dangers of commercial flights, but, you know, the rest of us weren't. He lost his beautiful wife, Barbara, in that plane that hit the Pentagon.
Yeah, a good question, rhetorical question, because we'll never know, but good question, Richard. Thanks. 1-866-889-8894. I certainly don't know the answer to that. Line two, Roberta here. Hey, Roberta, welcome to the Tom Hartman program. Roberta in New Mexico.
Yeah, Tom, good to be here again. Before I get into my point, I want to commend your music man. He is the top. I mean, when it comes to selecting music of political and social
yeah,
report.
Yeah, that's Brad Walrod in New York. He does a great show.
Yeah, Brad, you're great. Keep it up. In fact, I'd like to hear the Rush Limbaugh one again.
Okay.
That was great. Okay, Tom, butter you up.
Roberta. Just get to the question.
The purpose of that is so that you don't feel it as much when the horseradish and the vinegar come.
No, it's fine. Just get to the question, Roberta.
Here it comes.
That's all it takes.
Yeah, Tom. I wish that sometimes you wouldn't interrupt people, because that man who said the impeachment was necessary was right on with how most of us who have all the facts you have, or even people who have half the facts you have, that's what we think. Have you ever listened to Ramsey Clark? You know, it isn't just the president who can be impeached. Maybe on that phony election, that fraudulent election, the whole Supreme Court should have been impeached. It's certainly Scalia.
Yeah.
I mean, have you ever...
I agree with you there. You read Bush v. Gore, it is a travesty. And right in that decision, they said, and this decision doesn't apply to anything else, and it's not establishing precedent. It's only about this case. Say what? The Supreme Court has never done that before in 227 years.
Well, the Supreme Court should have been impeached. And according to that 14th Amendment, Section 3 that I keep talking about, there is certainly constitutional levy. And not to mention the right to vote never should be discounted on account of race, color, creed, or...
I agree, Roberta. And Roberta, I got a couple more calls I got to get to you. Want to make your point real quick? Pardon my interruption?
About the media telling a lie, that calling it lies, that's not the media's job. That's our job. The media is supposed to report the facts. Journalists report the facts without bias.
Yeah.
And, of course, we know they're corporate controlled, so they say what they're told. But it's our job to do this impeachment work. We the people.
Okay, I agree. I think you make a good point too, Roberta. That the job of the media, at least the media that represents itself as truth-telling media, as opposed to the media that clearly has a bias. I clearly have a bias. I put it right out there. I am not representing this program as the news. Right? It's just like Jon Stewart. You know, it's fake news. Well, this isn't fake news, but this is. A commentary on the news, as is all of all of competent talk radio anyway. But should the mainstream media be saying liar? I'm inclined to frankly think not, to think that they've been playing it right. But it's an interesting and I think legitimate question. Carrie in Southern Illinois is on the line. Hey, Carrie, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, Tom. Well, I agree with what you just said. I don't think the media should use the word liar referring to the President of the United States.
Yeah, because it's a judgment.
They continually point out his inconsistency in what he says and what's the truth.
Yeah. Okay, good. Carrie?
One other thing real quick. I'd like to say thank you to Dick Clark, because without him, Condoleezza Rice and Cheney and Bush would never be before that committee.
Yeah, although Cheney and Bush are not going to be before it under oath, and frankly, I was trying to find out during the break if Clinton and Gore are going to speak under oath or not. I think they all should.
Gore are going to be under oath. They didn't say that.
They have said that. Okay.
Yeah.
All righty, Carrie. Thanks for the info. I appreciate it, and I think you make a good point, and it's well said. Ray in Grand Rapids, Michigan. What are your thoughts on this, Ray?
Well, I'm just glad to say you got a great radio program here.
Thank you.
And I'd like to suggest a couple of websites for people to check out for more information on this.
Okay, if it's quick.
Okay, Alex Jones at Infowars.com.
Yeah, Infowars.
And also, the Memory Hole. It's got a lot of documents there.
Yeah, it's memoryhole.org, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Yeah.
And also, I'd like to bring up the topic of Skull and Bones, being that both John Kerry and George Bush are members of that fraternity.
Mm-hmm.
And it was on Tim Ross here at Meet the Press, and both of them dropped the subject as soon as they were asked any questions about it.
Sure. Well, that's because it's a secret society.
Yeah, there's something more to that. You go into the history of it all.
Yeah, there may well be. And my take on it is that Skull and Bones is one of the more toxic of the old boy network structures. People who are in fraternities remain fraternity brothers or sorority sisters, very often throughout their lives, and they help each other out and that sort of thing. And Skull and Bones, but you've got all these civic organizations, the Masons and the blahdy blahdy blah, the Moose, the Elk,
right.
And most of them are fairly public. The thing about Skull and Bones is, number one, that it's secret, and number two, that unlike even some of the traditional secret societies, like the Masons historically have been actually considered kind of a secret society. You can't, public can't attend their meetings like you can the Moose or the Elk or the VFW. While the Masons have, the Shriners have these hospitals, their first goal is public service. And Skull and Bones' first goal is helping out each other and it's
promoting within their ranks into society pretty much. And
yeah. So you have to
controlling whatever they want.
Yeah. And so you have to ask the question, what does this say about the people involved? And it raises flags for me, frankly. But at this point, if we've got two guys from Skull and Bones running for president, And George Bush has done what he has done to this nation with religion of conservatism, this false religion of conservatism, bizarre economic policies, voodoo economics, devastating our government and our commons, destroying the environment, wiping out our jobs. I'll take John Kerry, Skull and Bones or not.
It's a tough choice between the two. But when you have somebody that worked for the government and then goes into corporations and then back into the government, that's be a conflict of interest, couldn't it?
It should be. Yeah, it should be. And Ray, thanks for the call. And that raises the issue of for example, Thomas Scully, you know, the guy who it is alleged ordered Stephen Foster, the Medicare actuary, to lie about about the cost of the Medicare bill. How many billions of dollars would be transferred from your and my pockets into the for-profit hospital corporations and the pockets of the for-profit drug companies? And it turns out that he was a $675,000 a year lobbyist. Apparently, you know, according to AM News, the newspaper for physicians, before becoming the head of Medicare, and then immediately after the Medicare legislation was passed, he went back into being a lobbyist in Washington D.C. So, you know, it's not unique to him. I mean, it's been going on for a long time, and these are the kind of things that, to his credit, Ralph Nader has been pointing out for a long time, and I wish he would go back to point out things like this, you know, dealing with let's talk about the real issues here, Ralph. Judicial Watch is aggressively pursuing the disclosure of facts and decisions for White House staff and President Bush as well to begin taking CPRO nearly a month before anthrax was detected on Capitol Hill. This is actually kind of an old story. I mean, this is a lawsuit that was filed a year and a half ago, and this may have something to do with the lawsuit that's going before the Supreme Court now about the Cheney Energy Task Force. This is Judicial Watch's lawsuit. And here Larry Klayman says, the American people deserve a full accounting from the Bush administration, the FBI, and other agencies concerning the anthrax attacks. You'll recall the anthrax attacks 895 days ago took place just as Senator Pat Leahy, and who was the head of the Senate Judiciary Committee, which was the committee that had to release the Patriot Act to Congress for it to be voted on. I mean, there's all these bills before Congress, like the Rush Holt bill to make voting machines have to produce paper ballots so that there's an auditable vote trail. And you can have all the sponsors in the world on a bill. If the chairman of the committee doesn't release it from committee to the general body of the legislature, it won't get voted on. And what's going on here. And so Pat Leahy was sitting on the Patriot Act and making noises like he wasn't going to release it for a vote. So this was that very brief time when the Democrats controlled the Senate because Jim Jeffords had jumped ship from the Republican Party, if you'll recall. And so Pat Leahy is saying, I don't know if we're going to let this thing out. And Tom Daschle, the head of the Senate Democrats, is going, you know, I've got some real concerns about this Patriot Act. And all of a sudden, these two guys get anthrax in the mail. So, and now we discover the president was taking CPRO, which is the antidote for anthrax, a full month before this happened. Larry Klayman, the Judicial Watch, this conservative organization that sued Bill Clinton over Jennifer Flowers and led to the Monica Lewinsky investigations, he says the FBI's investigation seems to have dead ended, and frankly, this is not very reassuring given their performance with the 9/11 hijackers. So, strange times we live in. Fact-checking Condi Rice's interview. It's going to be interesting to see. Now, Condoleezza Rice has said, yes, she will testify. Or at least the White House has said, yes, she will testify. She's got to be scared to death right now, to the extent that I can feel empathy for someone who I don't think has served the country well. You have to feel for her because they're throwing her to the wolves. And they cut a deal. If the president and the vice president don't have to testify in public under oath, then Condoleezza Rice will. And they wanted that in writing. They actually wanted that in writing from the commission. And they got it. 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. Terry in Washington, D.C. is on the line. Hey, Terry, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hello, how are you?
Great, what's up?
Good. Piggybacking on a subject that you were talking about earlier, raising questions about George Bush's veracity, and I'm reading a very good book by a gentleman named Paul Waldman called Fraud, and it's about how President Bush sort of developed this whole persona, and it's all based on falsehoods. It's not a demagogic book in any way. It's a very astute assessment. And one of the things that he brought up, and I'd like your analysis, particularly the issue of how this administration wants to privatize Social Security and why it is such a bad idea, and how so many people have gotten sucked into this notion that, yeah, it's okay to invest, you know, use some of the money for their money, you know, to invest. And he was saying that Social Security was never meant to be a wealth creation program. So I just wanted to, you know, I'll take the comments off the air, but I was really interested in hearing your assessment about that.
Okay, sure. Thanks for the call, Terry. It is an article of faith for these people. I mean, when you understand that the conservative economic philosophy is grounded in a belief system, not in a trial and error, gee, we've tried this, it really works system. It is a belief system. You get it. You know, that George Bush Sr. was right when he called it voodoo economics back in, 88. And it is. Part of the conservative agenda is to destroy Medicare and Social Security, because those are what they consider to be socialist programs. And they're opposed to those. I mean, just very simply, they're just opposed to it. They think the government doesn't have any role to play in maintaining a civil society or taking care of people who have fallen through the cracks. And, you know, it's probably a legitimate subject for debate, but I think experience tells us that they're wrong. And I've been in a lot of countries where government doesn't do anything, and what you have is, you know, starving people in the streets. It's not a good way to live. I don't think it's the way most Americans want to live. Stay tuned. This is Tom Hartman.
They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. They're imported from France. They're certified eco-friendly. And they're reasonably priced. What am I talking about? Eco Wines. One of the best-kept secrets in America. Eco Wines from the south of France. Brought to you since 1980 by my company, the Organic Wine Company. My name is Véronique. I select these earth-friendly wines personally. They are made with organic grapes. They burst with life and flavor. Our number? Easy to remember. 1-888-ECO-WINE. Our site? Easy to find. EcoWine.com. See, if you're going to eat, eat organic. If you're going to drink, drink wisely. Drink organic. Our future depends on it. Remember our number? 1-888-ECO-WINE. And that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely, because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitzky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitzky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now. 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Biologists in Colorado have helped a native fish survive serious pollution in its gene pool. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. The greenback cutthroat trout once filled rivers in Colorado on the eastern slope of the Continental Divide. But people started putting sport fish like rainbow trout in those rivers, and the newcomers were hard on the old-timers. The cutthroats were crowded out of their natural habitat. They also started to crossbreed with their new neighbors, and they lost some of their genetic identity in the process. That's turning around thanks to some dedicated biologists and Rocky Mountain waterfowls. Andrew Martin is a biologist at the University of Colorado at Boulder, and he studies the genetic traits of the cutthroat trout. He says the first step to restoring it required finding cutthroats that were untainted by crossbreeding. The purebreds were taken to hatcheries, and their offspring were reintroduced in the streams high in the Rocky Mountains. Martin says the offspring are in waters that are free of foreign fish and isolated by waterfalls.
The trout are only in the highest elevation streams that are separated from downstream places by big waterfalls, so fish can't get above these waterfalls. It's the only way we can keep them native, because if there's so many introduced species now that they can't persist down lower where all the introduced species are.
The greenback cutthroat trout is actually native to a large area at lower elevations, but most of that watershed is now dominated by non-native fish. Martin says this project is working simply because a group of people took action to save a unique creature.
If we know that the conditions are deteriorating so much in this one place that the species could potentially blink off the planet, people start to care.
In this case, the people who care include members of Trout Unlimited and people in the Colorado Division of Wildlife and two federal agencies. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
You're listening to the Tom Hartman Program.
The moon is pulling at me. The moon is pulling at you. You swear to me it's the sun that's shining through. It's hard to push for the truth when lies are easy to find. I'm left with this trouble in mind.
And welcome back. Speaking from behind the good old working-class stainless steel microphone, high up in the green mountains of the People's Republic of Vermont, Tom Hartman here with you. I wonder what the FCC would say about it when the chat room attached to a talk radio show starts talking about sex. Hey, you guys. If you want to get to the chat room, yes, they are. If you want to get into the chat room on the TomHartman.com, just go to TomHartman.com and click chat room, and you can drop in there. Some great folks, very, very well informed, very articulate. So, what is the belief system of the? Well, we'll get into that later on this week. Just to wrap up this thing with Condi Rice. Before we move on to the next topic in the next hour, Condi Rice is now going to have to testify under oath. And this presents an interesting dilemma for her. Of course, the administration extracted a written guarantee from the commission that George Bush and Dick Cheney wouldn't have to testify under oath. But anyhow, Condi Rice had said that the administration took seriously the threat of terrorism before 9/11. But George Bush himself had said to Bob Woodward, "I didn't feel any sense of urgency about Al-Qaeda." And at the same time, the administration was actively trying to cut funding for counterterrorism and vetoed a request to divert $800 million from missile defense into counterterrorism, despite a serious increase in terrorist chatter in the summer of 2001. Condi Rice has said, "I would very much like to have know what more could have been done." Well, the administration could have, there's a long list. I guess we don't, that doesn't fall into the category of lie. It's more like rhetorical question for PR purposes. Iraq was put aside immediately after 9/11. This is going to be a tough one for her because, according to the Washington Post, and I quote, 6 days after the attacks on the World Trade Center, the Pentagon, President Bush signed a 2.5-page document that directed the Pentagon to begin planning military options for an invasion of Iraq. 6 days after 9/11. And she said it didn't happen. It's going to be a real interesting time here, the next few months. Interesting time. Tom Hartman with you. The True People's Radio.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or mistakes.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
Pop and not so pop culture, democracy and the news of the day. This is the Tom Hartman Program.
News break from the Minuteman News Service.
This is Don Waller in New York. The chairman and vice chairman of the independent commission investigating the September 11th attack said Monday that they would ask Condoleezza Rice to testify under oath in any future questioning because of discrepancies between her statements and those made in sworn testimony by President Bush's former counterterrorism chief. I would like to have her testimony under penalty of perjury, said the commission's chairman, Thomas Kane, the former Republican governor of New Jersey, in comments that reflected the panel's exasperation with the White House and Ms. Rice, the president's national security advisor. A voter survey tied to Republican effort to raise money for House candidates mislabels Thailand and the Philippines as countries that harbor and aid terrorists, say officials from both governments. A question on the National Republican Congressional Committee's Ask America 2004 Nationwide Policy Survey asks, should America broaden the war on terrorism into other countries that harbor and aid terrorists, such as Thailand, Syria, Somalia, the Philippines, etc.? Officials from both nations say the question came as a surprise since the Bush administration has praised their countries for their roles in the anti-terror war. With U.S. retail gasoline prices at a record high, Democratic presidential candidate John Kerry on Tuesday will propose a new policy to reduce fuel costs, igniting a political fight over how much Americans pay at the pump. Blaming the spike on the failed policies of Republican President Bush, a former Texas oil man, Kerry would pressure oil-producing nations to increase production and temporarily suspend filling the U.S. Strategic Petroleum Reserve, campaign aides said. Kerry chose San Diego, which has the highest gas prices in the country, $2.12 for a gallon of regular unleaded, to lay out his proposals. Alistair Cook, the broadcaster who epitomized highbrow television as host of Masterpiece Theater and whose Letter from America was a radio fixture in Britain for 58 years, has died, the British Broadcasting Corporation said Tuesday. He was 95. Cook died at his home in New York at midnight, a spokesman for the BBC's press office said. No cause of death was given, but Cook had retired earlier this month because of heart disease. More news after this.
We were just driving to school. Yeah, the music was loud. And we were all talking. I thought I had everything under control. Until I hit that kid in the crosswalk.
Please, look for pedestrians. Stop for them. Think of the impact you could make. A message from the Federal Highway Administration.
A Texas woman heating fish sticks was shot in the leg by a .357 caliber handgun that had been stashed in her oven by a friend, police said. Roxanne Perez was taken to a local hospital where she was in good condition, police said on Friday. For the Minuteman News Service, this is Don Waller in New York.
Minuteman News Break is a production of TakeBackTheMedia.com.
Sometimes when I see those in power pull some political action that's stupid, I say to myself, what were they thinking? But a recent action by the Bushites is so obtuse, so blindingly stupid, that you can only conclude that no thought at all was involved, that no one with the brain power of a single-cell amoeba could have been consulted on such a perverse decision. The Bush incident revolved around a bit of political fluff that the White House tried to foist on us last Labor Day. With his jobs record rivaling Herbert Hoover's, and with every industry from manufacturing to high-tech sending hundreds of thousands of U.S. jobs offshore, Bush's political handlers decided that he needed to do something. Not really do something in the sense of stopping our country's middle-class bleeding, but appear to do something. So, George announced that he was creating, ta-da, a new Assistant Secretary of Commerce for Manufacturing. Big whoopee. A new bureaucrat to do what? To be a cheerleader and provide political cover, of course. That was stupid. But then came stupid on steroids. 6 months after announcing this position, Bush finally got around to appointing his new manufacturing czar. It was Anthony Raimondo, a Bush campaign contributor and the CEO of a manufacturing outfit in Nebraska. Fine. Since he's from the biz, he might have an actual idea about how to stop offshoring. But no. Guess who had recently fired 75 of his own corporation's U.S. workers and built a new factory in China to employ 180 workers? Yes, Anthony, our new czar. This is Jim Hightower saying, this was too embarrassing, even for Bush's White House of big blunders, so Anthony's name was withdrawn. But it shows how clueless the Bushites are. As Senator Charles Schumer put it, this White House is so bad at jobs, it can't even fill the one it created.
Federal college loan rates are currently lower than they have ever been, which means by refinancing now, you could cut your monthly student loan payment by up to 50%. By calling 1-800-2-COLLEGE, you'll quickly be connected to College Loan Corporation. We will answer your questions, help you lower your payments, and secure a rate as low as 2.63%. It's easy, it's free, and so far, over 300,000 people have called. 1-800-2-COLLEGE. It's the smartest call you can make.
When you're the voice of reason, very few things get you excited. So you wouldn't expect something like a good price on a great copier to be one of them. But when the subject is a Xerox digital copier that delivers 35 quality pages a minute for a surprisingly low lease price of $134 a month and is so advanced it can be upgraded to scan, fax, and even email, well, that's enough to even make the voice of reason pick up the phone.
Call 1-800-ASK-XEROX for business lease details. Additional per copy charge.
Uncovers corporate lies, exposes political corruption, and has a clear vision of what America could become. Here's Tom Hartman.
And welcome back to our program. This is the radio support group of, by, and for We the People. At least the majority of we the people, the majority that more than two and a half million more of us, almost 3 million more of us voted for Al Gore or Ralph Nader than George Bush. I think that qualifies as a majority. Welcome back. Tom Hartman proving every day that, can you say liberal talk radio on the, that it works, that people want to listen. Yes, indeed, folks. And it, by the way, greetings to our new listeners on Cable Radio Network. Cable Radio, if you tune in your TV setup into those high channels, you know, where there's just music and no picture,
We are now on one of those channels on cable systems all across the United States. And Cable Radio Network, there's a link to it off TomHartmann.com if you want to see, you know, what they do and where they do it. The U.S. Senate is going to vote later this week. Greenwatch today just issued this Bush Greenwatch, this alert, bushgreenwatch.org. Great site, by the way. The U.S. Senate will vote later this week on whether to give a lifetime seat on the federal bench. This isn't just a federal bench, by the way. This is the federal bench for the Ninth Circuit. The Ninth Circuit is basically California. And the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. There are nine circuits. In fact, back in the old days, in the 1880s, the Supreme Court justices were the circuit court judges. In other words, you'd have a judge who was the judge of the Ninth Circuit, for example. And his name back then in 1886, his name was Stephen something. I'm forgetting his last name. Anyhow, it was Stephen. And he was also a member of the Supreme Court. And 8 months out of the year, he would sit on the circuit court in California, and then, you know, he'd take 2 weeks to take the train to Washington, D.C., and for 1 month out of the year, he would sit on the Supreme Court in Washington, D.C., and then he'd take a month to get back home. I guess that adds up to 11, but anyway, you get the point. And the circuit courts, this is no small... Sometimes they refer to them as a circuit court. Literally, it's called the Ninth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals. And it's the last stop, depending on where you are in the United States. The First Circuit's in Washington, D.C., for example. It's the last stop before the Supreme Court. And so very often, Supreme Court justices are drawn from the circuit courts. There's only nine of them. There's very few judges. So here now, the administration and the ones out in California, the ones out west. I mean, the circuit courts in the east, like the First Circuit, Washington, D.C., they tend to get cases like Dick Cheney, you know, versus Judicial Watch. Should Dick Cheney reveal who came to the energy policy meetings? Well, because it happened in Washington, so it ends up before the First Circuit. So the First Circuit tends to be the court that deals with, you know, more political issues. But those cases that have to do with things like land use, the rights of people to have parks, whether or not we're going to lease our public lands to farmers or to miners, and if so, under what terms and what obligations we're going to put on them about how they have to behave while grazing or mining on our public lands. Those decisions, by and large, are made in mostly in the Ninth Circuit, ranging from Alaska down to Southern California. And so here we have the Bush administration has proposed William Myers. He was a lawyer for the Department of the Interior. Not a judge, a lawyer. And they have suggested that he should become he should have a lifetime seat on the Ninth Circuit, and he will have substantial influence over environmental laws affecting 485 million acres of public land in Alaska and the American West. Now, what are this guy's qualifications? Well, he's a good friend of the Bush administration. As the as Senator Dianne Feinstein, who would know, I mean, this is her circuit to which he's being appointed, wrote in a letter to the president, Mr. Myers is neither qualified to serve on the Ninth Circuit, nor has he demonstrated the ability to be fair and impartial as an appellate judge, she said. Throughout his career, he has single-mindedly worked to advance the interests of grazing and mining industries at the expense of the environment. Oh, wait a minute. That is the criteria for being a Bush judicial appointee. Come on, Senator Feinstein, get with the program. She goes on to say, his record as solicitor of the Department of the Interior indicates that if confirmed, he would be a threat to California's strong environmental laws. Well, what did he do? You know, with this William Myers, who George Bush now wants to appoint to the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals, what did he do as, you know, that earned this wrath. Well, before being the head lawyer for the Department of Interior, that is, this is a politically appointed position in the Bush administration. Before that, he was a lobbyist for the National Mining Association. Oh, that qualifies him absolutely. And then before that, he was executive director of a trade association that promotes the interests of ranchers who graze sheep and cattle on public lands, called the Public Lands Council. In fact, when he was the chief attorney for the U.S. Department of Interior, now the guy before him in the Clinton administration had said that a cyanide heap leach gold mine in California would cause irreparable harm to an important spiritual site for the Kichon Indian tribe. And I'm probably mispronouncing it, Q-U-E-C-H-A-N, Kichon Indian tribe. And I would add, cyanide leach, heap leach mining, it's a funny way of mining. What they do is basically mix cyanide with water and crush rock, take the rock and crush it down to almost a dust, and then process it with this cyanide. And somehow, in a way that I don't understand, it's beyond my science learnings, the gold more easily comes out of this stuff. It extracts the gold. You know, the gold must not bind with it, because gold is a relatively inert metal, so it must bind up other things that would normally be, you know, surrounding the gold. I don't know the details of it, but basically what happens is they use enormous amounts of cyanide, and the consequence of this is that it renders the landscape toxic. And of course, water running off it, you know, when it rains, you get runoff water and it gets into the rivers and things. This is a real problem. And in fact, out west, one of the major sources of cyanide in drinking water is gold mining. So the last lawyer with the Clinton administration said, no, you guys can't do this. This was a mining company that wanted to have a cyanide heap leach gold mine in California. And as soon as Myers became attorney, or during his tenure in the U.S. Department of Interior, he reversed that decision. He said, no, it's fine. You can go ahead. You can do this. No problem. Go ahead. Now, what does the American Bar Association say about Judge William Myers, the guy George Bush wants to be to have a lifetime seat on the federal bench, one step below the Supreme Court? The American Bar Association gave Myers its lowest possible rating, with only a, quote, and this is quoting the American Bar Association, slim majority finding him qualified, end quote. More than a third of the members of the American Bar Association panel that decides, you know, whether they will recommend a judge or not, more than a third rated him unqualified. And guess how many members of the American Bar Association's committee that does this sort of thing rated him well qualified? None! It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. Well, the 9/11 Commission is rolling on. We have this rather remarkable reversal here. Condoleezza Rice is going to testify in exchange for George Bush and Dick Cheney not having to testify under oath. And so just so you know about that news, President Bush is going to spend 90 minutes today in Appleton, Wisconsin. He's getting in and out quick because he's tried to slash $1 billion out of job training since 2001, and his policies have just wiped out this state, his economic policies. So, you know, we'll pay for it, no doubt. He's going to give a speech. But I would guess that he's also going to walk away with another $1 million. There'll be a fundraiser attached to this thing. I would be surprised if there wasn't. Yesterday, the administration's gross mismanagement of No Child Left Behind, this from the Center for American Progress, forced Education Secretary Rod Page to announce the fourth revision of the law in 4 months. This thing has turned into a disaster. It is another step down the road of the conservative vision of, you know, public schools. We don't need no stinking public schools. If somebody's rich enough, they can send their kids to private schools. And if they're not, well, tough. They can flip burgers at McDonald's. Although I think McDonald's probably requires a high school diploma. The latest revisions give public schools some flexibility in meeting the requirement that 95% of their students must take math and English achievement tests for a school to be considered successful. That requirement had caused more than 1,700 schools in California alone to be listed as failing to meet adequate yearly progress. Now, see, here's the catch-22. You hear this and you say, well, you know, what's wrong with saying that a school has to meet standards? I mean, personally, I have no problem with saying, yes, you know, there's criteria, there's standards, we'd like our schools to meet it. The problem is that what this bill does is if your school doesn't meet the standards, they reduce your funding. And so what's happening is that those schools in white, suburban, upper middle class areas of the country are hitting the standards and getting more and more funding. And those schools, and keep in mind, there's a finite number of education dollars out there. And those schools in inner cities, those schools in minority areas, those schools where there's a lot of immigrants, those schools where you've got a lot of kids who have learning disabilities, are seeing their funding being cut and cut and cut. And it's just a disaster. Trying to put competition into education. Education is not a competitive business. I'm sorry. Doesn't work. Education is education. It's the Tom Hartman radio program, 1-866-889-8894, if you'd like to be on the show. 20 minutes past the hour. We'll be right back.
Are you tired of progressives spending all their energy on defensive struggles where victory simply maintains the status quo? We are too, and we're doing something about it. At ReclaimDemocracy.org, we're taking the initiative to revoke corporate power and restore citizen authority over corporations to enable genuine progress on the many issues that we all care about. Get involved. Visit us online at ReclaimDemocracy.org or call 406-582-1224.
Are you frustrated by your constant inability to lose weight? Are you looking for a natural, clinically proven weight loss breakthrough? Introducing CarboBlocker. Unlike anything else on the market, CarboBlocker is backed by clinical research that proves it effectively helps block the fattening effects of carbs without stimulants. Your body will think you're eating a low-carb diet even when you're not. The results are simply amazing. If you want to maintain the weight loss effects of low-carb dieting for the long run, if you're tired of clothes that are too tight and you want to look fit and sexy, then CarboBlocker is for you. It's clinically effective formula is safe, natural, and stimulant-free. And as a special introductory offer, when you order two bottles of Carbo Blocker, you'll get two bottles of Appetite Blocker absolutely free. Call in the next 10 minutes, and you'll also receive two free books, Lose Fat Now and the Low Carb Cookbook, a $100 value. Absolutely free, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. Guaranteed to work or your money back, so call now, 1-800-743-5704. That's 1-800-743-5704.
The Founding Fathers thought they'd stop corporations from ever overthrowing elected government. Little did they know that 200 years later, democracy would be stolen and twisted in the name of so-called conservative values. Hi, this is Tom Hartman. The Founders of America fought the Revolutionary War against the excessive corporate power of the East India Company, and presidents from Jefferson to Eisenhower warned us that extremely big businesses could destroy democracy. You'll find this extraordinary American story in my book, Unequal Protection: The Rise of Corporate Dominance and the Theft of Human Rights. It starts with the Boston Tea Party and ends with the rampant corruption of the Bush administration. It tells the dramatic story of how corporations hijacked the Bill of Rights, setting the stage for the CEO takeover of America. And it shows how we can take America back and tells the stories of Americans from Pennsylvania to California who are doing just that right now.
Unequal Protection is available in bookstores nationwide. And you can read several chapters online at unequalprotection.com. That's Unequal Protection by Tom Hartman.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. A recent report prepared by the Democratic staff of the U.S. House Education and Workforce Committee hangs the most solid number yet on the hidden costs of shopping at Walmart. The committee figures each Walmart store with a staff of 200 or more puts a $420,750 burden on local federal taxpayers for social services costs. These would include housing, education, energy, and tax benefits awarded to workers like those at Walmart who are not paid a living wage and for the most part do not have health insurance.
Setting up a radio station? Wondering what software to use? Listen to the words of Mike Chandler of WOBS in Florida talking about the Tune Tracker system.
I love the software. I mean, it is rock solid. It has not burped one single time. This thing has not stopped. And I tell you, I've got some software that I run at two of my other radio stations that cost tons and tons more. One I paid, I think, $1,500 for it. And then one system, which was the Arrakis DigiLink system, I paid $15,000 for it. But this rivals my $15,000 system.
As Mike Chandler said, the Tune Tracker system is rock solid. And the price? Only $349.95 for the pro version with traffic interface and only $149.95 for the original Tune Tracker 2. Either way, you'll have a radio automation system that performs like systems costing thousands more. For more information, go to our website, www.tunetrackersystems.com. www.tunetrackersystems.com.
Is the Tom Hartman Program.
I'll be the answer at the end of the line. I'll be there for you while you take the time in the burning of uncertainty. I'll be
welcome back. It's Tom Hartman with you. Too little, too late on the education policies here with Rod Page. What a mess. What a mess. What an absolute mess. Well, you know, it's this is the sort of thing I guess you come to expect from an administration that says things like...
That when we talk about war, we're really talking about peace.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Thank you, George. Always good to hear from you. And 1-866-889-8894, our telephone number. While this year's budget is woefully inadequate, writes the Center for American Progress, further cuts are planned. The administration will slice $1.5 billion from federal education funding in 2006. By 2009, funding will still be $1 billion below this year's level. Taking into account inflation and population growth, federal education funding in 2009 under this administration's plan will be 8.4% lower, $4.5 billion, than in 2005. Mind-boggling, eh? And people wonder, you know, well, what's wrong with our schools? Well, paying the bills might help as a starting point. 1-866-889-8894. Rob in Newtown, Pennsylvania is on the line. Hey, Rob, is that Rob Call of Op-Ed News?
That is.
Hey, Rob, opednews.com, your source for information on the internet.
You're talking about what they're doing with funding for education. Every time you hear about the Bush administration doing anything with education, their goal is to feed into right-wing Christian fundamentalist desire to kill public education. Public education lets kids think. Public education gives kids the skills to evaluate ideas.
And what about the argument, Rob, that is made by some on the right and some on the left, that public education has become a propaganda vehicle for the government, the administration, you know, whatever, or that even worse, or some would say not as bad, but whatever, it has become a propaganda vehicle for the nation's largest corporations. I mean, now you have textbooks where it says, you know, Johnny has 3 Oreo cookies and Sam has 2. How many Oreo cookies do they have between them? Johnny has 3 Snickers bars. Sam has half a Snicker, you know, like that. And they're actually putting corporate logos into textbooks now. You've got, you know, corporate logos plastered all over schools.
There are enormous problems with public education. Public education sets up kids to work in factories and work for as obedient soldiers. But it is so much better than these fundamentalist Christian schools and Bible schools. It's the same devil's dilemma that you have in that the Nader people are talking about. Do you vote for Kerry, who has an awful lot of connections with corporations, or do you vote for Bush?
Yeah.
I think there's a huge difference still.
Well, I see. My take on this is that public education is an absolutely necessary thing to have for democracy. You have to have an educated populace. This is why Thomas Jefferson why he created the University of Virginia as a free college, and he felt that all colleges should be free in the United States. And of course, the University of California system was free right up until Ronald Reagan became governor, and he took care of that.
That's what Kucinich is talking about, isn't it?
Yeah, I don't know, but it's absolutely what Thomas Jefferson was all about, and it's what we need to go back to in the United States.
So you agree with
free
me.
Public education?
So
oh yeah, I am. I just I wanted to put the argument on the table there. Rob, thanks for the call. Great to hear from you. 1-866-889-8894. The Tom Hartman Radio Program. Stick around. We'll be right back.
I'm Joe Perry.
I'm Steven Tyler from Aerosmith. Here for RAD. Recording artists, actors, and athletes against drunk driving. Yeah, you know we love it when the music does the talking.
And you know, the music stops when someone gets killed.
So never, 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 never let someone you know get behind the wheel if they've been drinking.
And they don't have to be plastered to kill someone. Even one or two drinks can impair your judgment and change your life forever.
So keep it real, keep it real. Friends, don't let friends drive drunk.
This is WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. I'm John Anderson.
And I'm Sarah Turner. There may be another grocery worker strike. 29,000 United Food and Commercial Workers International Union members, ranging from cashiers to meat cutters in the Baltimore, D.C. area, will see their contract expire tonight unless the UFCW, Safeway, and Giant Foods come to an agreement over the cost of health care benefits. Giant and Safeway officials say they can't compete with low-wage, no-benefit non-union stores like Walmart, but have arranged to hire more than 3,000 temporary employees in the event of a strike.
A lawsuit charging Chevron Texaco with human rights abuses in Nigeria will move forward over the company's objections. That's what a federal judge in San Francisco ruled last week. Chevron Texaco's used Nigerian military forces to provide security for its drilling rigs and pumping stations, and at times, these rented soldiers fired on citizens. This particular lawsuit was brought on behalf of those killed during military maneuvers conducted at the behest of a Chevron subsidiary in 1998 and 1999. A key aspect of this latest ruling is that evidence linking some of the killings to soldiers working in a direct capacity for Chevron Texaco provides a strong argument that the company could be held liable in those deaths. There's still a long way to go in the case, though. A full trial isn't expected until the middle of next year at the very earliest.
Show us the jobs!
The AFL-CIO-sponsored Show Us the Jobs tour is in full swing. Workers from each state in the union are traveling through 8 states highlighting America's job crisis. According to the AFL-CIO, each day more than 85,000 American workers lose their jobs. Edgar Moore is a tour participant.
We've been trained to think that if you give a good day's work for a good day's pay, you'll be all right. The company will look after you. Well, now we know that that's a lie.
The tour continues through this week towards its final stop in Washington, D.C.
Some bad blood brewing between auto workers unions in the U.S. and Canada. The Canadian auto workers are unhappy with the United Auto Workers' establishment of an organizing office in Ontario near two non-union Toyota assembly factories. The CAW says Canadian workers need Canadian unions. The UAW denies it's engaged in member poaching.
Here's today's Dow Bob Report. Throughout history, some jobs stay and some go. IBM researchers think they've found the four qualities that make jobs last in an era of employment extinction. Flexibility, teamwork, face-to-face interaction with customers, and routines that can't be automated give jobs legs. Translation may be the next job swept into the dustbin of history with audio conversion software. Of course, some jobs are expected to withstand the test of time, like doctors, lawyers, and news reporters.
You've been listening to WINS, the Workers' Independent News Service. For more information, visit laborradio.org.
This is the Democracy Zone with Tom Hartman.
Welcome back. It's the pill that will help you escape the matrix, the Tom Hartman radio program. You're listening to 26 minutes before the hour, actually at 2 o'clock on the East Coast. And you can do the math wherever you may be on the planet. It's Tuesday, the 30th of March, 2004. The mainstream media. Boy, what is up with the mainstream media? Here in a series of interviews, New York Times reporter Elizabeth Bumiller recently admitted how intimidated the mainstream media had become after 9/11. Many expected papers like the New York Times to strenuously guard the nation's the media's historic watchdog role, particularly at a time of war and with an administration bent on secrecy. But she admitted the media became, quote, very deferential, end quote. And the reporters there... And the reporters are now particularly loath to challenge the president to his face because, quote, it's live. It's very intense. It's frightening to stand up there. So this is the, and Richard Clark talked about George Bush being intimidating. Ignoring polls that show the nation split on the Iraq question, she said the administration did a spectacular selling job and defended reporters' softball attitude, saying, think about it. You're standing up on primetime TV asking the President of the United States a question when the country's about to go to war. There was a very serious, somber tone, and no one wanted to get into an argument with the President at this serious, very serious time. End quote. According to the New York Review of Books, and this is from the Center for American Progress, a remarkable insight here into the media situation. The nearer the war drew, the less editors were willing to ask tough questions. The few stories that provided a critical analysis of the administration's war plans were buried in the back pages. And according to veteran Washington Post reporter Walter Pincus, the placement of these stories was no accident. The Post's editors, he said, quote, went through a whole phase in which they didn't put things on the front page that would make a difference, end quote. But at least the Post actually publishes critical stories. The New York Review article notes, quote, the performance of the New York Times was especially deficient. While occasionally running articles that questioned administration claims, it more often deferred to them, end quote. And then, of course, this remarkable report that has been done about Fox News. As the news analysis points out, Fox News was complicit in spreading the myth that there was, quote, no doubt, end quote, that Iraq had weapons of mass destruction that posed an imminent, urgent, immediate, and mortal threat to the United States. As early as August 2002, before the invasion of Iraq, Fox News contributor Fred Barnes said, quote, we know beyond a shadow of a doubt that Saddam Hussein has been pursuing aggressively weapons of mass destruction, including nuclear weapons, end quote. On March 23, 2003, Fox headline banners blared, quote,
huge chemical weapons factory found in southern Iraq, end quote.
Turns out it wasn't true. On April 11th, the Fox News report announced, quote,
weapons-grade plutonium possibly found at Iraqi nuke complex, end quote.
Now, this was a reporter from the Pittsburgh Tribune Review, a newspaper owned by Richard Mellon Scaife, the notorious right-wing philanthropist who has funded, in part, organizations like the Heritage Foundation. And it, of course, was soon debunked. But they got it out there. Bill O'Reilly, for example, said, and I quote, you cannot refute, and neither can anyone else, quote, that, quote, a load of weapons-grade plutonium has disappeared from Nigeria, end quote. And that Iraq is capable of giving that material to people, quote, who will plant an atomic device, a nuclear device, in a city in this country, end quote. O'Reilly fabricated the charge from a news report that Halliburton's Nigeria operation had misplaced not new plutonium, but americium, a completely different compound. It is a radioactive compound, but not one that you can use to make an atomic bomb. And it was Halliburton misplaces, Halliburton in Africa misplaces some americium, right? A radioactive isotope. And Bill O'Reilly turns this into weapons-grade plutonium and spins it into this whole thing with Iraq. It's really quite remarkable. Despite no substantive evidence, Center for American Progress points out, Fox News contributor Fred Barnes began to echo the administration's Saddam al-Qaeda drumbeat as early as 2002, saying, quote, the CIA now believes there's a real connection between Saddam Hussein and al-Qaeda, the terrorist group that attacked the United States, end quote. Well, nice job there, Fred Barnes. Got any proof? No. No evidence. It's faux news. Similarly, Sean Hannity claimed, with no proof, on 12-9-02 that al-Qaeda, quote, obviously has the support of Saddam, end quote, ignoring an L.A. Times report that same month which stated, quote, U.S. allies have found no links between Iraq and al-Qaeda, end quote. Hannity later declared on 4-30-03 that he possessed documents providing, quote, a direct link between Osama bin Laden's al-Qaeda network and the Iraqi regime. He ignored a National Knight Ridder report that month that senior U.S. officials confirmed that they had found, quote, no provable connection between Saddam and al-Qaeda, end quote. But even after the U.N. and Congressional 9/11 Commission found otherwise, Fox News contributor Ann Coulter went on the air in September and said, quote, Saddam Hussein has harbored, promoted, helped, sheltered al-Qaeda members. We know that. Well, now we know it just ain't true. Never happened. 1-866-889-8894 if you'd like to call in. I noticed Jeff in Alabama was on the line there, and I got long-winded and Jeff dropped off, so feel free to drop in. Just so much going on in the news. It's the state of Maine is going to try its hand at universal health care. I think this is great. Universal health care in the state of Maine. From everything I understand, I'm going to have to do a little more research on this, but I understand that they're actually looking at a single-payer system. A single-payer health care system is where you get the insurance companies out of the way. They're no longer skimming money off the top and you know, taking their piece of the action. But the government just pays the bills. You still get to choose your doctor. You get to choose your hospital. You get, you know, your doctor can make rational decisions, all that kind of stuff. But the government just gets out of the way and says, here. Or the insurance companies have to get out of the way, and the government just pays the bill. It's the way it works in Germany. It's the way it works in most of the industrialized world, not the way it works in England. England has socialized medicine where the government actually owns the medical system. And that has been less than a spectacular success, although the British would probably rather have that than what we have. There seems to be a pretty broad consensus about that. 1-866-889-8894. Jeff is back on the line in Alabama. Hey, Jeff, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi there. How are you?
Well, I'm great. What's up, Jeff?
You know, you were talking about the news media being soft on Bush, not asking the hard questions.
Yeah.
It seems like during that period of time, they had to be planning and getting ready with him to be embedded with the troops. They were probably looking for a hot story. No wonder they weren't too hard on them.
Yeah, you know, the embedding with the troops is one of the real masterstrokes, propaganda-wise, that this administration pulled off. And the thing that surprises me is not how, you know, it's a shame in some ways how we didn't get, I mean, that is to say, it wasn't communicated to us how those reporters who were embedded with the troops had a psychological sense that they had to report what the troops, you know, there's this, you know, kind of go along. I mean, these guys, your life depends on these guys. But beyond that, what I thought was really interesting was when bad things started happening in Iraq and the Pentagon started unembedding reporters, that didn't make the news. So anyway, it's an interesting one. Jeff, thanks for the call. I appreciate it. Jim in St. Louis is on the line. Hey, Jim, what's up?
Hi. I was thinking also about the media, and I think it just seems like it would be a big change. You know, last hour you're talking about, you know, calling Bush a liar or whatever, and it just seems like there's not a lot of context given in the news.
Yeah. Well, there's been, I frankly think that this has to do with the commercialization, the corporatization of our news organizations, and the fact that Ronald Reagan stopped enforcing the Sherman Antitrust Act. I mean, I track this all back to Reagan's administration when basically they said, okay, competition is not important. It's okay for corporations to get bigger and bigger and bigger and inhale all their competitors to the point where you don't have a competitive marketplace anymore, and or you have the facade of competition but not real competition. And as a result, news organizations used to compete based on things like investigative journalism. Mm-hmm. And they no longer invest in that because they don't have to. And I think, you know, that in my mind is not only a tragedy, but a loss for democracy. I mean, about the only organization that we have left that's doing real investigative journalism now is public radio and public television.
Mm-hmm.
And,
yeah.
And you know, which some would argue is their job, but still, this is just a shame.
It seems like that there was a lot of, you know, a lot of things came together at once at that time. A lot of different sort of like thoughts, you know, is this going to be, you know, we've just passed Armageddon,
yeah,
possibility, and we had the Clash of Civilizations talk.
Yeah.
And
it was a difficult time. It was a difficult time, absolutely. But you know, the problem that I see is not one where you can like point a finger and say, aha, it's their fault. It's a
right.
systemic problem. The rules of the game changed under the Reagan administration. And because those rules changed, naturally everybody who's playing the game, all the news organizations, all the newspapers, all the big networks, the you know, even local radio stations started selling out to big combines. And once the rules of the game changed, the game itself changed. I mean, it's a perfectly natural thing. And it changed in a way that enhances profits for a small number of corporations, but makes it almost impossible, to get into the game. It's very difficult now for anybody. You know, there's this strong effort to block, for example, low-power community radio stations.
Oh.
There's some people I know here in Vermont who are starting one up in June, and it's taken them 3 years just to get permission. And this is for a little radio station that's going to serve a one town of about 8,000 people. I mean, it's just a little local effort. And there's just this very, very, you know, the very strong effort to stop any kind of competition. And I just don't think it's healthy for democracy.
Right. I had a question that's been prying on my mind. It's mm-hmm. about education, and that is, you know, you've mentioned that people learn well in a kind of like a one-room classroom environment where one person who knows, you know, another student who knows a little more teaches the other.
Yeah, it's called peer-to-peer teaching.
How would that work, you know, in our big, massive schools that we have today?
Well, it can be made to work, actually. I saw it work in the Taiwanese public schools where they do a lot of this. And you know, the classroom that I saw, the teacher – now, this isn't something that's institutionalized throughout their system, but it is widespread. It's not like from the top down, but a lot of teachers do this. The teacher came in, and there was a class of about 40 kids. and spent the first 5 minutes basically outlining what they were going to talk, you know, what the lesson was for that hour. And if you think back to every hour that you've ever had in school, you can probably summarize any hour of education in 5 minutes. Now, that doesn't mean everybody's going to understand it in 5 minutes, but you can summarize long division in 5 minutes. A lot of people won't get it, but you can summarize it. So she summarized the lesson for the day in those 5 minutes, and then she looked around the class and she said, "Now, who understands this?" And seven or eight kids stood up and said, "I do." And she said, "Okay, great. Now you teach." And the kids, and they formed these little circles around these kids who were standing. And the kids who were sitting, as they got it, when they reached the point where they understood what the teaching kid was teaching, they stood up and started participating in the teaching of the other kids who were still sitting. And the teacher was like a resource for these kids. You know, she traveled around the classroom and walked around the classroom and helped them out. And you could see learning moving across that classroom like a wave. It was just absolutely extraordinary. And that's one of the things that I think is...
It's not spreading ignorance. It's just it's people really do get it and then pass it on.
It's the old saying that education is not the... I think it was... maybe it wasn't Descartes. Education is not the filling of a bucket, it's the lighting of a fire. And the goal of education has to be to light the fire. So, Jim, thanks for the call.
Thank you.
Great to hear from you. I appreciate it. 1-866-889-8894. In the face of rising gasoline prices and stagnating fuel efficiency. Now, this is really interesting. I got an email today, my Talking Points email from the Republican National Committee, was, "You're supposed to talk today about how John Kerry voted to raise gas prices by 50 cents a gallon." Now, they don't point out that that was like a decade ago or more, like 14, 15 years ago, you know, a long time ago. But they, you know, "You're supposed to talk today about how John Kerry voted to raise gas prices by 50 cents a gallon, raise gas taxes." And I think that the reason that the Republicans are planting this, I can only call it disinformation, is because John Kerry today proposed a plan to reduce gas prices, or he is going to propose it today. He's also out there calling on the government to, which actually, you know, again, the rules of the game. You want to play the game of car manufacturer? Here's the rules. You have to make cars that have certain mileage standards. He's saying we need to increase our auto efficiency. Another great idea, I think. 1-866-889-8894. Don't answer line 10. Okay, got it. So when Senator Kerry and Senator John McCain pushed such a proposal 2 years ago, it failed in the Senate on a 62-38 vote. But this time, maybe something will happen with this. The auto manufacturers fight this. You know, we don't want these increased fuel efficiency standards. And I think it's a terrible mistake. I mean, it would give them an opportunity to tool up a whole new range of products that they can make all kinds of more money on. 10 minutes before the hour, Tom Hartman with you. Stay tuned. We'll be right back.
Grapes are one of the most heavily sprayed of all agricultural products? Most people don't. But that is why it's so very important to drink wines that are made with certified organic grapes. And that is exactly what we are inviting you to do today. Taste our wines. We select them personally. They come from small properties in the south of France. They are delicious. Connoisseurs love them. And they are earth-friendly. My name is Véronique. I founded the Organic Wine Company in 1980 for people just like you. People who love wine and want to do well by our earth. Call us at 1-888-ECO-WINE. We'll answer all your questions. I look forward to talking with you. Call 1-888-ECO-WINE, and that is ECOWINE.
I guess I better let the dog in.
Like the small dog that rules the house, Small Dog Electronics is the small computer company that really rules when it comes to customer service. Small Dog Electronics is your authorized Apple reseller in Wakefield, Vermont. Sure, you can buy your computer out of a catalog, but how do you know you're really getting what you want or what you need? At Small Dog, they don't work on commission. Their only motivation is making sure you're a happy customer. Put your business on the leading edge with the world's fastest computer, the new Macintosh G5. You'll finish the job ahead of the pack, and automatic security updates lock out viruses. That's speed and dependability that will keep you focused on your customers instead of sitting on hold with tech support.
I guess you want to get on the couch, huh?
Like the small dog who everybody makes room for, Small Dog Electronics is big on customer service. Small Dog Electronics. Check them out on the web at smalldog.com or at their showroom on Route 100 in Waitsfield.
No way. You're not getting on the bed.
Are you or a loved one making too many trips to the bathroom? Listen closely because you're not alone. Over 30 million men suffer from an enlarged prostate. That's why if you make frequent trips to the bathroom, have urgency, hesitancy, or a diminished sex drive, then Super Prostate Formula is for you. It was designed by nationally recognized physician Dr. Michael Toplitsky. The results with his patients have been amazing. Reclaim control now and join the thousands of satisfied customers who have had incredible results with Super Prostate Formula. When you order two bottles of Dr. Toplitsky's Super Prostate Formula, you'll also get two bottles of his Super Libido Formula, an all-natural alternative to Viagra to enhance sexual vitality and performance, plus his book, Complete Guide to Prostate Health, and his newsletter, a total $100 value free as your gift. Guaranteed, or your money back. If you're not completely satisfied, return it for a full refund and keep his Libido Formula book and newsletter free as your gift. Not available in stores. Call now, 800-452-0978. 800-452-0978. That's 800-452-0978.
Ski resorts could be left high and dry in a warmer climate. I'm Richard Hoops for Earthwatch Radio. If forecasts for global warming are correct, many of Europe's most popular ski resorts are likely to go bankrupt in the next few decades. That's according to a report presented in December at the World Conference on Sport and Environment. The report says the ski season will grow shorter and the snow line will move higher into the mountains. In Switzerland, as many as 60% of all ski resorts could close in the next 30 to 50 years. One researcher says the scenario is not quite so bleak in North America. Daniel Scott is a geographer at the University of Waterloo in Ontario, and he studies recreation and tourism. He says ski resorts in eastern North America will face warming temperatures and less snow, but he says they're better equipped than European resorts to deal with the problem.
In Europe, they don't have the sort of extensive snowmaking systems that we do have here in eastern North America, where every ski area has almost 100% coverage of their skiable terrain in snowmaking.
Scott says snowmaking is not as widespread at resorts in western states and provinces, and it's not clear how they'll deal with warmer winters. Scott says resorts that try to compensate for a shortage of natural snow will see expenses go up.
They'll have to make more snow, which will have costs associated with it. I think the average ski area in the Northeast is something like $750,000 U.S. a year. So it's a substantial, you know, amount of money. And if you're doubling the amount of snow that you have to make, well, your costs go up accordingly.
Scott says the news about Europe's ski resorts has drawn a lot of attention, and many resort owners are now looking at their abilities to weather environmental change. Earthwatch Radio is a service of the Sea Grant Program and the Gaylord Nelson Institute at the University of Wisconsin.
Bringing democracy to the United States of America, here's Tom Hartman.
Transforming the world by revitalizing democracy in the United States of America. Tom Hartman back with you 4 minutes before the hour. 1-866-889-8894. Our telephone number, and Ann in Sarasota, Florida is on the line. Hey, Ann, welcome to the Tom Hartman program.
Hi, Tom. Thanks. The reason I'm calling is I heard you speaking a little bit earlier about how Maine's going to single-payer system for insurance, health insurance.
Yep.
And I just wanted to say that I wish more states would do that, including my state, Florida, because my husband had a serious illness last summer, and we had insurance, and it's private because I'm self-employed. And I got to tell you that even though we had insurance, they messed us around. It took almost 8 months to get all the bills and everything taken care of. Stuff that I thought was covered wasn't, because they changed the policy and failed to give us notice. And I found double billing. I find that the insurance companies get billed a different rate than the hospitals if you don't have insurance. Like if certain things aren't covered, they
jack the price up on you.
Hospitals all know that, and so they bill outrageously to you, but the insurance company don't have to pay that, but you do if you don't have coverage.
Right.
It's a nightmare.
Yeah, it is. It absolutely is. I'm looking more into the main thing. It turns out, apparently, what they're going to do is they're going to provide some sort of subsidies through private insurers in Maine. So this isn't the single-payer program that I thought it was, but it's a step in the right direction. In my opinion, you've got Medicare is providing medical services to people all across the United States at an administrative cost of between 1% and 3%, depending on where you are in the country and what's involved. But broadly, it's just a little over 1%. Because, I mean, how much does it cost to have a government bureaucrat say, okay, pay the bill, right? But your private health insurance companies typically are skimming anywhere from 10 to 25% off the top of the, you know, out of $100 spent on health care, you know, $5 to $25 of that is going to the insurance companies because they've got to pay a profit to the dividends to their stockholders and multi-million dollar salaries to their CEOs.
Don't forget, yes, the CEOs.
And then the corporate jets and the advertising and the marketing, and you got to pay the lobbyists. And, it's crazy. We need to just get rid of them. And thanks for the call. I got to move along. It's the end of the show. But thanks for I appreciate great hearing from you. This is the Tom Hartman Radio Program. Thanks today to Louise for producing the program. Thanks to Brad Walrod in New York City for editing our music. Thanks to our sponsors for participating. Thanks to the folks in our chat room for showing up. Great to see you there. And read your interesting conversation. Thanks to you for listening. Join us tomorrow, same time, same place. We'll be right back in 24 hours.
You've been listening to the Tom Hartman Program. Check our website at www.tomhartman.com for archives of this program and more information.
Excuse me. Pardon me.
Slow down, Kyle. You'll choke on your coffee.
Can't. Have to finish getting the newsletter out before I can do anything else on my schedule today.
I used to have that problem before I discovered the Newsletter Factory.
Well, how'd they help you?
Their expert team of writers, editors, designers, and project coordinators do all my hard work for me. The Newsletter Factory even developed a readership survey that helped me produce the most appropriate content.
Sounds great, but I like doing some of the writing. It's just technical stories and layouts that bog me down.
No problem. In addition to turnkey projects, the Newsletter Factory gives you a smorgasbord of services from design and proofread to edit or full write. The Newsletter Factory can also help with printing and mailing. They keep you informed the whole way. Plus, the process is cost-effective and streamlined, so the Newsletter Factory doesn't have to compensate for lost time or a mistake.
Just like a factory.
Now you're catching on. Call the Newsletter Factory at 800-788-9550 to get started today. Or visit them on the web at www.newsletterfactory.com.
I will, thanks.